on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome, welcome, welcome to this, what will be a truncated edition of the Horn for Friday, the 11th of December, 2009. I had earlier posted that there would be no show at all, but you know how I feel about playing hooky. I don't like it. So I figured out a way to get the boy to the Christmas dance, and I've got an hour and 10 minutes or so till I have to go get Doodle from her road trip to Virginia. And in that space of time, we can have a little bit of Friday on the front porch. Is that okay? I hope so. And like I said, now I understand why Rush isn't married. The only thing he ever has to go out and pick up is OxyContin. I'll be here all weekend. Try the veal. Don't forget to tip your waitress. Here in the hills and hollers of almost level West Virginia, the sun has set. It is a Friday. That would mean it is a Shabbat for those who practice the Jewish faith. But it's also special insofar as, if I understand correctly, Hanukkah has begun. And so to all members of that faith within the Horn family, and outside the Horn family for that matter, a very, very happy Hanukkah. It seems appropriate to me to mark the beginning of Hanukkah with the definitive word on the origin of that holiday, and for that we go to our resident knower of things. What a title that is. And that would be Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com. FinnermanWorks.com, FinnermanWorks.com, your RDA of irony. And Eugene, although not posting this today, has at the bottom of his RDA of irony for today a redirection or the URL for this posting from a previous date, going back, I think, to 2008. Last year. And Eugene writes, "The story of Hanukkah, hell us no, we won't go. In the 2nd century BCJ, before Cousin Jesus, Syria extended far beyond the borders of the country that we know and love. It also included Turkey, Jordan, Iraq, Israel, and Lebanon. Lebanon still may be part of Syria, we're not sure. This very large kingdom was a fragment of Alexander's empire that had been divided among his generals following Alexander's untimely death. Young man he was. When he died. What, 30, 33? Yeah, just like Jesus. How about that? But at any rate, his former empire had been divided among his generals. One of them was Seleucus. And Seleucus grabbed that very large kingdom that was called Syria. And 2 centuries later, his progeny were still ruling it. You may recall that the Ptolemies, Alexander also had a general named Ptolemy, the Ptolemies ruled Egypt, whence comes a young woman with a Ptolemaic family name, called Cleopatra. But anyway, as Eugene writes, Seleucus was Greek, as was the ruling caste in that region, and these Hellenes made themselves comfortable by recreating the Greek culture in their kingdom. The same was true of the other grasping Greek and Macedonian generals. Egypt, under the Ptolemies, as mentioned, was Hellenized. There were Hellenized satrapies in Afghanistan and India. You will recall that the region of Afghanistan, known as Kandahar, is a modification of Iskander, which is a modification of Alexander. Because Kandahar was originally Alexandria. Alexander had a real passion for naming stuff after himself. That's why there's an Alexandria in, you know, Egypt, too. But at any rate, Eugene notes there were Hellenized satrapies in Afghanistan and India. Even the statues of the Buddha started to look remarkably like Apollo. See, that's what happens when the Greeks get hold of your cultural and mythological history. They start making your stuff look like their stuff. That's why the images of Jesus went on to look a lot like Apollo, too. And interestingly, artistically, Apollo also began to look a lot like Alexander, and vice versa. You see how it all sort of runs together. But at any rate, a descendant of Seleucus, Antiochus III, attempted to expand his empire into Greece. However, as Eugene notes, Rome had the same idea at the same time. Guess who won? The Romans pushed him out of Greece and then defeated him in Asia Minor, 190 BC. His son Antiochus IV inherited a smaller empire. He did, however, try to make it more cohesive by imposing uniform Hellenization. One province, however, and you can guess which, with a very idiosyncratic theology, didn't really appreciate the glories and gifts of Greek civilization. Who could resist? Eugene asks. All the enticements of Western civilization, art, theater, medicine, bathing! Eugene, speaking for himself and his people, says, had we been a little more receptive, Pygmalion could have been a musical 2,000 years sooner. But, Eugene says, my ancestors must have been real ingrates. In fact, those Semitic fundamentalists were so unappreciative of imposed Western values that they rose in rebellion. Do you think that history repeats itself? He asks. The Greeks were then obliging enough to lose the war. This was at a time when the Jews hardly ever won. Obviously, long before there were Nobel Prizes in economics or Emmy Awards for comedy writers. In any case, but for Jennifer Aniston's ancestors, we wouldn't have Hanukkah as a psychological shield against the veritable avalanche of Christmas. So there you have, in a nutshell, everything you ever wanted to know about Hanukkah but had never quite remembered to ask. But, you know, like all cultures have some sort of solstice festival. And that happens to be the Jewish one. Christmas is coming. That's what the Christians did to Saturnalia. Up there where Saturnalia was never even there to be replaced, the Germanic tribes had a solstice festival. If you go out to, Cahokia Mounds, just across the river from St. Louis, Cahokia sits in Illinois. You will find that those pyramids are aligned astronomically so that they could tell when the solstices were going to come, both summer and winter. You will find the same thing if you go to the Mesoamerican societies and look at the pyramids of Chichen Itza on the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico. There are, or were, before the daggum thing was moved, there was a magnificent gate at the ancient ruin of a city on the verges of Lake Titicaca in Bolivia. Thank God Ferg's not here. He would absolutely be on the floor at the name of that place. I've said it before. I've said Titicaca before, around him before, and it was minutes upon minutes before he regained his composure. But anyway, on the shore, on the verges of Lake Titicaca, there was a city called Tiwanaku. And its gate was aligned astronomically to let folks know when the solstice hit. Because when the solstice hits, well, if you're going to have a civilization, you've got to know when it's coming. Because you've got to start getting ready for the spring planting, and that tells you how long you have until spring. At least if you haven't been screwing up the planet so badly that the seasons are all out of whack, which they sort of are. But anyway, so a solstice celebration for the children of Israel, a solstice celebration for everybody in their own due time. But theirs begins this evening. And happy, happy, happy Hanukkah to all. Okay. It's about 10 minutes past the hour. And I want to just talk a little bit about something that happened recently in the Federal District Court of Maryland. Wow, how's that for a segue?
Woo!
Thanks, Bob. There we are, all holiday spirit and Mark and Son, and you know, Bob wants to talk about the District Court of Maryland. Yeah, I'm about as subtle as a sledgehammer sometimes. But anyway, a little something that happened in the Federal District Court of Maryland recently. There's a group of folks. One of them is called MCRE, and it's like Mountain Communities for Responsible Energy, I think. And another group called AWI, the American Wildlife Institute. And then there is an individual named plaintiff who I guess lives somewhere in Greenbrier County, whose name I will not mention. And you'll recall that over the last couple of years, I've told you about the forward-looking windmill farm that was proposed for a distant ridgeline in Greenbrier County, West Virginia. You know, sort of a light in Cole's miserable darkness. A way forward in terms of sustainable energy. And frankly, a pretty good idea of what kind of effort would be required to create the Coal River Wind Project. Now, the differences between the Coal River Valley in eastern Boone County and western Raleigh County and the Greenbrier Valley are the differences between night and day. I mean, no disrespect, and I have all the love in the world for the folks in the Coal River Valley because they are my friends, they are my dear ones. But it's a narrow little valley, and you know, if you've been listening to this program for any time at all, that it has been absolutely under siege from the ravages of mountain removal and the insatiable lust for coal and cash of the likes of Don Blankenship. And so its people are beset by a number of problems, both existential and narrowly defined as health problems, and they have their rights to enjoy their properties, their home places that many have had for generations, either severely infringed upon or utterly destroyed. And in the Coal River Valley, the heart and soul of the Coal River Valley is Whitesville, West Virginia, a town of shuttered buildings along a dusty main street, a ghost town for all intents and purposes with regard to everything except the tumbleweeds. Massive monster coal trucks roll through Whitesville on West Virginia Route 3. And they begrime all of those former buildings of that former vibrant little community where the windows are boarded up with a patina of toxic coal filth as they go by. And there couldn't be any broader contrast than to compare the Coal River Valley in Whitesville with Lewisburg and Greenbrier County. Without a doubt, Greenbrier County is the toniest county in the state of West Virginia.
It has lots of artisan shops. Lewisburg is a delightful place. It is of old, old settlement, named for one colonel or general or, I don't know, Field Marshal Anthony Lewis, I believe. Greenbrier County is the home of the Greenbrier Resort, one of the oldest resorts in this nation. There is a lot of... Dadgum, frog in my throat. There's a lot of hoity-toity in Greenbrier County. A lot of old money. A lot of well-to-do. In recent years, in recent decades, a lot of folks from out of state with more dollars than cents have moved into Greenbrier County and sort of created a little rural paradise there for themselves. And so it was that when a company called Invenergy out of Chicago, Illinois, decided to put a windmill farm, a fairly modest windmill farm, on a ridgeline in Greenbrier County, that a great hue and cry went up from what I like to call the NIMBY crowd. NIMBY, of course, if you recall, stands for Not in My Backyard. There is no, down around Lewisburg, there is no mountaintop removal. It is, as it were, like a little Switzerland, for some reason or another, by forces unknown, protected against that to which the folks of the Coal River Valley and Mingo County and Logan County and McDowell County and Wyoming County and Lincoln County and, yes, even Fayette County and Kanawha County are all subjected to. It's like there's a force field around parts of Greenbrier County. So when Invenergy proposed a windmill farm for Greenbrier County, the Tony folks who had moved in and bought real estate from out of state and, you know, set up things like rare bookshops, set up a hue and cry. Now, bear in mind, the vast majority of these people could not see with a telescope one of the windmills. But they began to holler about, oh, dear God, Muffy, our viewscape will be absolutely destroyed. Oh, we will be absolutely awash in viewscape pollution. Oh, get me a tonic. I do believe I'm going to faint. Oh! And there were public hearings at which a number of my friends from the Coal River Valley and even, I do believe, Boss Man Wayne showed up at to speak in favor of sustainable energy in West Virginia as a means of economic diversification, as a means of bringing good-paying construction jobs, that sort of thing. And at that public meeting, the crowd from Greenbrier County hooted and hollered and swore at him and treated him like garbage. Because, you see, the folks in the Coal River Valley have a vested interest in seeing sustainable energy come to West Virginia because that is the only hope that they have for ever having the light of dawn shine through their coal-blackened dark night. And I think, these spoiled babies from Greenbrier County just absolutely pitched a fit and fought all the way through, fought in court, fought in the Public Service Commission, did everything they could to keep this windmill farm and the sustainable energy that it represented from coming to their beloved Greenbrier. Because they were more than happy to use the electricity generated by blowing up another of their sister counties as long as it was NIMBY, not in my backyard. And they lost. And Invenergy went forward with its construction plans and actually got several of the turbines up and running. But then the astroturfers and the spoiled babies of Greenbrier County played their whole card. There is, and I have great respect for it, a law in this country called the Endangered Species Act. And it serves as an attempt to protect certain species that are designated as endangered from extinction. Animals come onto or go off of the Endangered Species Act, depending on how successful the Endangered Species Act has been in protecting them. Think of the return of the bald eagle after we eliminated DDT. Think of the Florida alligator. Once endangered, now supposedly thriving. Well, on that endangered species list is something called the, don't laugh, Indiana bat. Now, one would think, with it being an Indiana bat, that you would find it in, you know, call me crazy, Indiana. But apparently it is a migratory bat. It's a bat that bats its way from Indiana to points elsewhere. My research has not gone that far. I don't know. I don't know if there's a festival out there for when the bats return to Pismo Beach or, you know, what. But the Indiana bat is apparently migratory. And that was exactly what the NIMBYs in Greenbrier County needed. And so they went to court in the Federal District Court of Maryland. And they alleged that the Invenergy windmill installation on Beach Ridge was killing Indiana bats. Now, to be honest, there's research out there that's been done, and there are bat problems. Most of them are non-migratory bats, and most of the reading I did, none of the stories were about the Indiana bat. No, there were, like, Pipsqueak bats. I can't remember the name. I don't have the story in front of me right now. But they were indigenous bats, non-migratory, and yes, for some reason or another, they were getting killed by... getting killed by windmills. So that's a problem, and it was under research to figure out a way to mitigate the damage. Now, there wasn't any evidence, and this is the important part, of a bat kill at Beach Ridge. But that didn't stop the NIMBYs. You know, remember the ones who were more than happy to have the mountains here around me blown up, or the mountains in the Coal River Valley blown up, and just joyfully run around the room flipping on lights and destroying other communities, as long as it wasn't happening in their backyard and there were no hateful, god-awful, abusive windmills in their beloved Greenbrier County. With me so far? So they went to court and they alleged that the windmill farm on Beach Ridge was killing the Indiana bat, and that the wind farm should be shut down because it was killing an endangered species, and that since there was an endangered species involved, that the windmill had to be shut down because the company had not pursued what's called an ITP, an incidental take permit. Here's where we enter the funhouse. Invergy had not pursued an incidental take permit because there was none needed. Like I said, we're down the rabbit hole now. There has never been a moment's proof of any Indiana bats on that site. I mean, you'd think if these windmills were killing Indiana bats that you'd just be able to walk up there under one of those functioning wind turbines and just look around you and find, you know, Indiana bat ceviche laying all over the ground. It wasn't there. Not a single Indiana bat was ever caught or killed on the premises. Not one. But the NIMBYs from Greenbrier County said that they had audio recordings of the specific and identifiable screech, hoot, cry, squeak, whatever, of the highly estimable and endangered Indiana bat on the premises. They had a trial in front of the federal judge up in Maryland. It's interesting that they did not file suit in West Virginia because, frankly, the West Virginia district judge probably would have looked at him and said, you're kidding, right? You're asking me to after this sustainable energy company has expended over $100 million to build this wind farm, you're asking me to shut them down because you imagine a bat to be on the premises? An imaginary bat? You want me to just undo all of this because of an imaginary bat? Because where Beech Ridge is concerned, the bat is imaginary. The Indiana bat is very real, and yes, it's endangered. And it deserves to be protected. But you can't protect an endangered bat where the endangered bat ain't. I mean, there's some Yogi Berra stuff in there somewhere. What'd Yogi Berra say about his hitting style? I hit them where they ain't? Well, the NIMBYs from Greenbrier County are going to protect the Indiana bat where the Indiana bat ain't. And here, oh, here's the punchline, brothers and sisters. The NIMBYs won. The NIMBYs won. They convinced that federal judge in Maryland to shut down an over $100 million sustainable energy complex in the name of an imaginary bat. Holy cow. Now, I don't know about you, but I think we got to reevaluate our litigation strategy with regard to mountaintop removal. All I've got to do is go into court and allege that there's a pink sparkle unicorn on Coal River. Oh, dear. Yeah. I'm not kidding. An imaginary bat shut down a big chunk of West Virginia's sustainable energy future. And the judge, you know, the judge shut the thing down until he said, Invenergy, you got to go get you an incidental take permit. You know, for incidentally taking the bats that aren't there. I mean, every form of logic from Aristotle forward is like, what? Invenergy was forced into the logical impossibility of proving a negative. The NIMBYs weren't forced to prove that the bats were there. All they had to do was imagine them. Whereas the wind company had to prove a negative, that they weren't there. Because this federal judge up in Maryland was willing to be persuaded that by simply imagining the bat, the NIMBYs had met their burden of proof of a preponderance of the evidence. More likely than not that the imaginary bat was there. But he didn't just shut the complex down until they got the ITP. He told them that they couldn't run the windmills between the months of November and April, when the winds are the strongest around here, because that was when the imaginary bat was imaginarily migrating through the windmill complex that doesn't have any bat ceviche laying around the turbines. Now, what does this mean? This means that this NIMBY crowd from Greenbrier has put a shiv all the way up to the hilt in the backs of all the dedicated people busting their asses to bring sustainable energy to the very heart of darkness in Whitesville. Because, you see, and when I brought this to their attention, some of the people who support the NIMBYs said, oh, well, we'd never do that because they want the wind farm on Coal River Mountain. Which just showed me how clueless some people can be. Courts operate on something called precedent. When one court says it, another court can pick it up and be persuaded by it. So a federal judge sitting without a jury, making the findings of both fact and law in Maryland, found that there are imaginary bats on a mountain, on a ridge in Greenbrier County. And so while I'm sure it's true that none of the NIMBY people would complain about any imaginary animals on Coal River Mountain, I think it's entirely likely that some freak from the coal industry would. You know the mindset. If we can't have it, no one can. So all they've got to do is imagine that there's a migratory worm or bird or bat or beetle or fish on Coal River Mountain, and all that hard work, all that sweat, all that labor, all those hundreds, nay, thousands of hours go down the toilet. One step forward, two steps back. Because of NIMBY. Because there are people in this state and there are people around the country who don't want no windmills. They don't want no solar. They don't want no geothermal. No natural gas, no oil, no coal. But oddly enough, they do still want electricity. They just want electricity that comes from environmental nightmares and human rights horrors that take place out of their sight. And I submit to you, and you are free to disagree either by email or by phone, that these folks are as bad or worse than the coal industry. Because, you know, the coal industry is the devil you know. You know what they're going to do, and you know how they're going to do it, and you know how they behave. But this NIMBY crowd is supposed to be environmentalists. But what they are is actually privileged and spoiled and willing to continue to sacrifice anyone and everyone, man, woman, and child, wherever the energy is being extracted, as long as they have their electricity. Because, you know, bear in mind, the minute the electric goes out, they are the first ones to holler, Lord, Lord. It's frustrating as hell. You know, with friends like these, those of us who are trying to bring sustainable energy and some human rights, human dignity to the coal fields, we don't need any more enemies. By the way, ELO is informing me that the judge in the imaginary bat case was nominated by George W. Bush in 2003. ELO says, "Nuff said." Yeah, enough said. Because if you are sitting in a federal judgeship as nominated by George W. Bush, you can bet your ass that you know where your bread is buttered, and it's buttered by the coal, oil, and gas industries. So the less sustainable energy that there is in West Virginia or in Appalachia, the more likely it is that your pals are going to make out. Might be kind of fun to get a look at this judge's blind trust, wouldn't it? And perhaps find out how many shares of Massey or Peabody or Consol or Arch he owns. Thanks, Sue. That sort of closes the loop, doesn't it? But that's the kind of thing that we're up against here in Appalachia. We don't just have to struggle against the coal company. We have to struggle against some sort of self-centered idealism that says it's okay for others to suffer as long as we don't have to. We face a real problem in this country. We face an energy problem. We need to, A, stop using so much of it, which entails, you know, step one, stop wasting it. But then we got to figure out where what we need comes from. And there will have to be a degree of sacrifice somewhere along the way. And I, for one, am sick and damn tired of Appalachian people and people near coal deposits generally being the ones doing all the sacrificing. And the people who live near the coal fly ash dams. You know, people in Perry County, Alabama, where they're train loading this radioactive muck in and dumping it on them. And, oh, congratulations, Merry Christmas. That's what we face. With friends like these, you know? With friends like these. So there we go. Very little time remaining. I'm told that I have to get out of here a little earlier than expected. So let's go straight away to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert.
Stop here.
Say what?
I said, we can't stop here. This is bad country.
Oh, what a reference.
What are these people talking about? Listen. I love a bat. Don't get me wrong. I love a bat. Love them. They're awesome. They're our own little natural pesticides, you know?
Yeah. You got bats. You ain't got bug problems in your garden.
Yeah. You know, and you don't got mosquitoes. You know,
yeah, you know, as long as you're not huffing the guano, you're going to be okay.
There you go. And the guano's got purpose, let me tell you. Now, I just am lost here. Like, do these people not understand what we're doing, what we're fighting against? Do they have any idea? You know, I think when people demonstrate such a disregard for reality, I mean, it's blatant disregard for reality. You know, like they essentially, their point of view is null and void in my eyes. And I hate to be such a fascist about it, but Jesus, what are you talking about? Do they have any idea what we're facing?
No, they don't. They live in this. Albert, you should see Greenbrier County. It's lovely. Unlike the straight up and down mountains of southern West Virginia, it's rolling pasture lands in broad, relatively speaking, broad valleys between just noble, beautiful mountains. You get over the last hump of high, hard mountains, and bang, you're in Greenbrier County, and it looks like paradise, and that's why my forebears settled there before they ever came on here.
And that's fine. You know, that sounds like that sounds like where I am. It does. It sounds just like where I am. You know, I'm in the Driftless region, and you know, though, I'll tell you, we have windmills, and I don't know what kind of heartless bastard, I don't care if you're a liberal or conservative, I'm talking human being. I don't know how you cannot, like, didn't you like pinwheels as a kid? Remember the fascination?
No, there are emerging studies that the noise of windmills is very distressing.
Oh, well, let's put that on the scales next to mercury and arsenic and, you know.
3.5 million pounds of high explosives a day. You know, and that's the thing.
Finite source.
You know, and this is a sort of
extinction.
Yeah, this is a sort of foxization of the issue, because they've set up a false equivalence. You know, as if a spinning wind turbine rotor, turning very slowly.
Bats can move. Are you kidding? Have you ever seen them fly? They're always clicking and clicking and clicking. They know where everything is. They rarely hit things.
That's well, I would say that the Indiana bat's been pretty damn successful at dodging the rotors, seeing how there ain't no dead ones. Oh, come on. You got it. Hey, wait. I hung one out there, and I'm not getting a go, Brother Bob. Bat ceviche at the foot of the turbines? I don't get a little golf clap for that? That's funny.
That's gorgeous. It is. But the issue itself, Bob, is just grotesque. This is grotesque. These people have... I hate to be a fascist, but, you know...
I don't think you are being one. That's twice you've said that. I don't think you are.
Yeah, but because what makes me want to do is it makes me want to put a boot on them and look at them and say, shut up.
Shut up.
Yeah,
give them the Grayson treatment. STFU.
That's right. What is that, Chris Matthews? You see, if you don't know what that is, you shouldn't be able to be talking to anybody. That's another. We should just write that rule right off the bat. That's how out of touch you are. It doesn't take much to figure out what that is, Chris Matthews. Hey, you see how out of touch that guy is?
He's
still all enthralled with the cod piece anyway.
His leg's still tingling.
Oh, forget it. He goes crazy.
But I mean, obviously, Albert, you do get my sense of frustration. Because, I mean, I'll tell you the truth. I engaged some people on an email list. And I mean, I was roundly criticized for thinking that these people were hopelessly out of touch and a bunch of babies and astroturfers.
Yeah, it strikes me as astroturf. It really does.
And they have absolutely no clue whatsoever, Albert, about the idea of precedent within the federal law. They think that because they promised that they won't come and imagine a bat on Coal River Mountain, that some other idiot won't, too. But, you know, I live in the real world.
Yeah, and if
I don't, you know, I'm not in Greenbrier County. I'm not in freaking Fern Gully.
No.
And, you know, Batley may be safe over there, but, you know, guess what? If there was an Indiana goddamn bat hanging in a tree on Cherry Pond Mountain... There ain't even ceviche left. Stupid bastards.
Yeah, it's... Yeah. No. It's, no. I mean, if that kind of game you could play, I mean, geez, it doesn't take much to show coal pollutants literally killing things. Or, you know, all this. I mean, you know, I don't understand even the rationale behind it. Saving birds. I mean, you know, it's one thing. It is one thing. And I'll give them that, you know. And that field in Texas showed that it can be done. You know what I'm saying? With the giant flocks of birds that go down, you know, in terms of their migratory route. And even butterflies, you know. Like, they have radar. They can pick up these huge flocks that, you know, granted, you know, that's why you shoot a shotgun at something, you know, when there's a bunch of them. Because, you know, one, two, yeah, you're probably not going to hit. But when there's a bunch of them and that wheel is going, well, goes without question, one of them or two of them or a few of them are going to get killed. You know, so you just have them for the time period shut off before the flock gets there. Once the flock is gone, there they are. You know, I don't...
Yeah, but see, they don't... Apparently, Indiana bats aren't that cohesive because they migrate from November to April.
Yeah, okay. They don't migrate. They're frozen.
Oh, and by the way, you want an extra bonus here? You know that the Chinese and the Germans and the Spanish are real good at windmill building, right?
Yep.
This site used American-made wind turbines with American steel.
Nah, this stuff's got to stop. It really, 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 really does. I don't think, you know, I don't think once exposed to the entirety of the issue, anybody... I mean, I don't know how anybody can have, you know, I mean, an opposite point of view as us. And I don't even mean to say that, you know, it's not naive. I mean, if you could sit down and explain, you know, listen, just the basic maths, you know, listen, we have a finite resource that we're currently getting energy from. While we have this resource, we have X amount of time with which we're to replace this resource with something that's renewable. Or we will collapse. And, you know...
And that's the thing about wind. It's not renewable, Albert. It's perpetual.
Exactly. That's even better. Absolutely.
Solar and wind are perpetual.
Geothermal. I mean, exactly. When we run out of that, we're done. It's not weak.
If we run out... By the time we run out of that, if we're not on planet Zulop, we didn't deserve to be here.
There we go. Exactly. And isn't that, that should be the long-term goal. I know it's my little fantasy, and most Star Trek geeks love it, but what the hell's the point if we don't get out there and do something? You know what I mean? What's the hell the point if we don't have a prime directive? I don't understand. We need these things. This is the final frontier. We have to go get it. We have to go do it, and there's only really one way we can do it. Because I'll tell you what, if we go up there, you know, armed to the teeth, yeah, we're going to probably get a boot in the face ourselves, you know, personally. That's just my little wishful thinking. But then again, maybe not. Maybe we need to go out there armed to the teeth. I don't know. You know, sometimes you look at the ocean and you kind of look at how life evolves and feeds off the smaller and smaller and smaller. Maybe we need to be armed to the teeth. But at the same time, I would think, you know, that's a worthy goal. What's the goal of this civilization that we're in? What's the purpose? What is it?
Oh, no. See, I dare not answer that because the first thing that will come out of my mouth is snark. And I'm trying not to be overly snarky about this.
What is it? I want to know. What is it?
Well, I mean, do you mean the United States or do you mean, you know, human consciousness? And
let's just talk, you know, as a planet. What's our purpose here? What are we doing? You know, that's at least me. I mean, you know, I came to this, I didn't really ask to be brought here, and now I'm here, and I want to know the game. What is this game? What's the end game here?
It's always easy to punt and go straight to Kurt Vonnegut, who said, the longer I live, the more I am convinced that we were put here to dance. But honest to God, I think, you know, every creation myth, I mean, and you kind of got to go by some of this, even if you don't buy into it. Every creation myth has this, many creation myths have this perfect state where the sole goal of humanity was simply to enjoy creation and be.
Yeah. Well, that sounds fine to me. Then let's do that. Sounds pretty simple too, you know. Let's just be. Let's be sustainable. Let's, you know, it was interesting.
Let's try not to take a big dump on our neighbors just because we can.
And this is going to probably, you know, once you view all of what I'm about to tell you, once you see these things, it's probably not going to paint. You know, it's probably going to just make a little bit more, a little darker the clouds. But there's a website. And everybody, if you just write this down, really, really easy. Really, really easy. V as in Victor, B as in Bravo, and S as in Snake, .tv, VBS.tv. And look for a show. I mean, this is probably one of the best original content providers on the Internet. It's that good. And what this is these, they have documentaries up the yin yang. You guys will be watching these for months, but they have this special one. It's called Toxic. And one of them, puts a nice little, lens on West Virginia. And, you know, he does the whole Kaford Mountain thing, shows you one of, Mr. Blankenship's houses on the hill. Talk to a lot of locals. These are documentaries, working class documentaries. These are ground gritty as it gets. They also go into the tar sands of Canada. They go into the gyre of the Pacific Ocean, and it kind of Naples, the garbage of Naples, and they go everywhere they can to find these hot spots, and they interview people and show you documentation of these things. And actually, education is the key here. You know, these people, they sit there, what would you call these people? Bleeding hearts? What would you call these kind of people that don't want to get their hands dirty? And they want everything to just be, you know, picket fences and manicured lawns and they live in this world that doesn't exist. They don't want to sit here and there will be tough choices to be made. You know, that goes without saying. But, you know, just like in terms of the fact that we eat meat as a species has a price to it. You know, and it's a high price. You know, and, you know, you can sit there and say, well, do you want to eat meat that tastes the best that it can possibly taste, that's good for you, and has the minimal impact? Yes, of course, everybody does. Well, then we're going to have to pay for that. And you're going to have to probably eat less. And I don't know about your belly, but my belly could probably do it a little less. You know, but at the same time, it's not even so much the belly. What about your children? What about the world that we're leaving these people? You know, we have these giant Auschwitzes that, you know, all this antibiotics and all these hormones and all this other stuff. Well, all these hormones go into the ocean. We're not even going to be able to eat. And they're over here worried about a bat? There's so many problems.
Oh, by the way, and Kid A from the chat room, otherwise known as Michael, just caught one that we both let fly right by. He said, Albert said, rule that one out right off the bat, and neither of you caught it?
see. Lordy. Lordy. I don't understand this crap. We need a couple steps in a row. And maybe in terms of the last call I was had with you, I don't know, that phone kept dying on me. I don't know what the hell was going on. But, we sit here looking at, what Obama's doing. I don't know, man. He better wisen up real quick. He better just do something. He better start waking up. Fire Rahm Emanuel. Fire a bunch of these guys. What are they accomplishing, these people? What are they doing? I don't understand what the hell's wrong with Democrats. I don't understand.
I know.
And that's the other thing. Because I'm going to presume, these environmentalists, either they're astroturf or they really do care about something or another. And I don't even know if you can get...
Well, no, I'm sitting here and I have fits about the diminishing polar bear the population because of the melting of the ice caps. And that's real for me. And it's real for you, Albert.
Yeah.
But you know what? Every time that you expend energies protecting an imaginary animal, that makes it less likely that a real one whose habitat and whose very existence is threatened will survive.
Yeah.
I mean, I get that. You get that. And that's why I say that, that's why I presented the whole Indiana bat thing as their whole card. Because they started off with viewscape pollution, and then everybody said, hey, we didn't fall off the turnip truck yesterday. You can't see them. And then they went, oh, busted. Indiana bats!
I just wanted to, because the bats, you can't even talk to these people. They're just unbelievable. I mean, look at their first argument. What'd they call it?
Viewscape pollution.
Viewscape pollution.
Yes, and it was going to ruin their view shed.
You know,
I know. Calling Dr. Orwell. Calling Dr. Orwell. Emergency.
That's almost like a Fox News poll. Does Obama deserve it? Did you see that?
Yeah, the one where 120% agree.
It's all, yes, he doesn't deserve it, or no, he did, is it? Is it almost ridiculous? I don't even know. It wiped my brain. It was so dumb. Just popped the fuse of stupid. I had to ground without fault, you know. But, you know, back to what I was saying with kids with windmills. What do you mean, viewscape? They're awesome. They're awesome to look at. They make you...
Well, I was told that, you know, they have to cut roads up there, and they destroy a lot of animal habitat when they cut those roads up there. And sometimes they put up fences, which really impairs animal migratory patterns. Because animals are too stupid to go around a fence. But then again, the dominant animal in those woods is a freaking deer, and unless the fences are like the Israeli Palestinian wall high and wall thick, the deer will just go leap over and nibble, 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 leap over. You know, and I got the proof. I can't raise a garden out here because I've got the deer trail equivalent of I-5 running through my backyard.
And you know what? All you need to do. Is identify the main thoroughfares and tunnel them. They'll go in the tunnels. They'll go right through the tunnel. You know, you just put one of them big, you know, corrugated concrete freaking, you know, things under there, and they'll go through it. They don't care. You know,
But again, maybe, you know, I fear we're getting lost in the forest for all the trees.
True. Yeah.
Because the whole thing, Albert, is dishonest. Because the whole thing is nothing more than NIMBY. And NIMBY, you know, granted, the fossil fuels industries, whether it be coal or petroleum, you know, going after the crap coal that's practically lignite or brown mud or tar sands, they're awful, and they are a nightmare. But on the other side of that, there is something called, there's NIMBY, and NIMBY is every bit as dangerous almost as those rotten bastards in the extraction industry.
Yep. They're the lube.
Yeah.
They're the lube. But with good, you know, with the good intentions. That's the good intentions paving the road to hell right there. You know, these things, you know, these people don't know. You know, that's...
Yeah, I mean, do they honestly think that there's an equivalence between a windmill and a bat in Greenbrier County and 3.5 million pounds of high explosives a day? Do they really think there's an equivalence between a windmill in Greenbrier County and a First Peoples community in Arizona whose literal water of life is being taken from them to provide electricity? Do they really think that those things equal each other?
Yep.
Because if they do, they miss that day in fourth grade where they show you the equal sign with the slash through it that means doesn't equal.
Greater than, less than. They failed that one, huh? I used to love that. Put the little alligator teeth on it. Yeah, they failed that one big time. I don't know how you could ever fail that. That's pretty easy. Greater than, less than. Which one's greater? Which one's less? I don't understand. You know, you don't need to be a Libra to know how to use scales. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You don't have to sit here. I mean, this is ridiculous. They must have missed, you know, that they missed the fourth grade. They must have missed the third grade, you know, dinosaur, you know, fascination that you get, and you realize, oh, extinction. Like, why don't they understand what that word means? Because that's the road we're headed on.
And see, we're quickly running out of time, Albert, but I want to be clear about something because, you know, there is an insect that's involved in the mountaintop removal struggle. It's a mayfly. The coal industry had made great sport of, oh, look at them worrying more about a damn bug than they are about whether or not a man can feed his family.
Yeah.
But the point is, A, the mayfly is real and actually exists there.
Yes.
B, that mayfly is a marker species. Okay? Mm-hmm. When the mayflies are gone, you ain't far behind. Okay? Oh. So they are not, again, equal sign, little slash through it, not equal to.
Right. No. Well, what do you think a bat eats?
I know.
know. I mean, come on now. You know, they eat mayflies.
That's what it is. They're chasing the mayflies because the mayflies are quick enough to dodge the windmill blades, but the bats ain't.
That must be. Yeah, the mayflies are
smart. Or maybe when they get tired, the bats try to roost by hanging upside down from the hub and get all disoriented and then get chopped into bat ceviche.
But, you know, just like you were saying, you know, it shouldn't be too hard to go out there, let it run for a month, you know, during these time periods, and, you know, monitor.
Albert.
Get a body count.
Wait a minute.
I know.
No. Wait a minute. Okay? I just want to throw this out there for you. This company was responsible. They didn't just go start throwing windmill turbines up willy-nilly. Okay? They did a pre-construction bat survey. You know, you put up the little nets, and the next morning you go and check for bats. And if there are bats, you'll have bats in your nets. And then you turn the little bats loose, and everybody's happy, happy.
Yep.
And you go, oh, we got a bat problem. Well, we might have to re-sight by 20 yards. But there weren't any bats. Oh, well, see, you didn't survey between November and April.
Yeah, November and April. Please. Please.
Yeah. I wasn't going to tell them about the bats. The poor bastards would find out about them soon enough. Oh, no. Lost to Albert. And I hate to do that, but it happened rather auspiciously, because I gotta go. And by that I mean I have to go and pick up Doodle, from her, school field trip over to see a play in Virginia and eat a, what was it called? A German-inspired meal. You know, I'm a bad daddy. She was all excited about the German, because she's been to German restaurants with us, and we've sat down to lovely meals of Rouladen or Sauerbraten or, Wiener Schnitzel. I make Currywurst, which is like the fast food of Berlin. And I make a good one too, by the way. My Currywurst sauce is the best in Fayette County. It's also the only Currywurst sauce in Fayette County, but, you know, who's counting? I looked at her and I said, German-inspired meal, huh? And she said, yeah. I said, sauerkraut and weenies with a side of boiled potatoes? And she just looked at me and that smile went away. And she said, Daddy, that's German-inspired. I said, nah, I'm kidding. It won't be sauerkraut and weenies and a side of boiled potatoes. So I can't wait to pick her up and find out what the German-inspired meal was. But I got to go pick her up. I got to do that right now. This has been a fun hour. I wish we were doing two more of it, but I can't, because after I pick her up, which will be 15 minutes over, 15 minutes back, then I got to pick up the boy from the massive hormone flood that is otherwise known as an eighth-grade Christmas dance. And so I guess we'll all get together for more and Monday. That be okay? I hope so. You guys have a wonderful weekend. Don't forget to check out the Rick Smith Show over the weekend, and also Live Conversation Radio returns Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with All Foxed Up and your host, John Fox, right here on the Horn. Again, have a wonderful weekend. We'll talk soon. We'll finish out the show with a rerun of last Thursday night's program that had that delightful little history lesson built into it. Happy Hanukkah, everybody. And see you later. Bye.
Right On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Sorry about last night, but even if I had been here, there would have been no show. It's a funny thing that I've noticed, and, you know, when you get older, you start paying attention to things like this because it makes your lumbago hurt and you have to go get a mustard plaster and things like that. But anyway, about this time of year, around here, every year, we get a honking Jim Dandy dose of wind. I think the intelligent design of it is to blow down the rest of the trees and blow over your leaf piles so you get to do it all over again. And that's what happened. It's, you know, like 60-mile-an-hour winds rattling down the hollers around here. And I wasn't here. I was down in the Coal River Valley. But upon returning, I found out there was no electricity. Because, well, coal may keep the lights on, but it doesn't do it very well in the wind. One of these days, the power is going to go out, and I'm not going to be able to stop Agnes from picking up the phone and trying to find Don Blankenship's phone number and saying, "Hey, you pencil-thin mustache freak, I thought you said coal keeps the lights on. Well, it's not doing a very darn good job." "Well, ma'am, that would be Appalachian Power." "Nah, that's just the middleman. You're the one making the claim. Get the juice going, you fat freak." One of these days she's going to do it, because she was threatening to do it again last night. But anyway, everything went off here. The streaming computer went down. Eventually the battery backups gave way, and all the power went out. So even if I had been sitting here, there would have been no show. So my apologies. But there's a show tonight. We may have to do some backing up and catching up, but there is most assuredly a show tonight. So, well, you know, oh, be joyful. And my apologies for last night. So we will dive right into things. We might have to backtrack a little bit because we didn't really have an opportunity to do a whole lot of follow-up on President Obama's glorious announcement of the glorious escalation of our glorious war in Afghanistan. You know, when you think about it, wars in Afghanistan, that's the kind of thing that empires do. And you know what? The reason we don't do it very well is we're not set up to be an empire. The Constitution is not designed for empire status. And that's why we're not very good at it, I think. Because we're not supposed to be. But like I said, there may be some backup. I think it would be appropriate to look back to the aftermath of that really, really good speech. And just, you know, get a little sense of perspective. Of course, I don't know. Maybe everybody's, all the other liberal talk guys have already done this. But it somehow seems to bear repeating. There were, of course, right-wing hissies. Lou Dobbs had a hissy. Who the hell does this president think he is? President? But it's not that. It's not so much who President Obama thinks he is, as it is, who does the Congress think it's not? Now, I've been saying this for a long time now, but it bears repeating. If we want to make war on Afghanistan, the Constitution is rather explicit on how you go about it. Now, the president might ask for it, but it is the Congress's job to declare war on somebody. And maybe, just maybe, there ought to, some brave congressman ought to, I mean, you know, one of those that really believes in going and killing those Afghans, ought to tender a declaration of war that is in line with constitutional principles. Call me crazy. Call me a cab. And see how that flies. And if the Congress goes, oh, hell no, we don't want to do that, then they just can't vote any more money for the sort of empire wannabe adventure in Afghanistan. It's that simple. Well, it would be that simple if, you know, Congress wasn't covered up from floor to ceiling in hypocrites, but you know what I mean. Because the Constitution is rather explicit. No, it's not rather explicit. It is explicit. That only the Congress has the power to declare war. But why would we let something like the Constitution get in our way, get in the way of our attempt to join the Junior Empire Builders Club, huh? But I told you. And of course, I don't think you were in much disagreement. I did tell you that the right wing, if Obama sent 30, would want 60. If Obama sent 60, would want 120. If he sent 1 million, they'd want 2 million. Told you, didn't I? Guess what? I was right. So here's how it shakes out. Monday evening, or Monday morning, I guess it was. Monday morning, Fox News contributor Karl Rove appears on the Today Show. What? There's nobody that NBC can find to go and talk to Matt Lauer besides Karl Rove? But they talk, and Karl Rove makes it, well, you know, he says, he's got an opinion about Afghanistan, right? Sure.
And you have said in the past that the president was wobbly on Afghanistan. He's going to announce tonight he's going to send between 30 and 35,000 additional troops there. Wobbly anymore, or is that a definitive action?
That's a definitive action. And if the president does do that, I'll be among the first to stand up and applaud.
Okay, you got that? I'll be among the first to stand up and applaud. Well, Barack Obama did that. So immediately, well, there he is in his natural home on Fox News. And remember, he was going to stand up and applaud.
But for now, the president should be as tough as he can be. And I didn't see that tonight, did you? I did not see a Winston Churchill-type performance. The president was slick, but did he rally the world to fight the horrendous Taliban? I don't think so. But I could be wrong. Summing up the president's speech tonight was, okay, but not exactly.
Don't worry, this is just Bill O'Reilly, and it's all the falafel talking.
Now for the top story, the best analysis anywhere. We begin with Fox News analyst Karl Rove in Philadelphia tonight. You know, there wasn't the sense of urgency that you would expect from a wartime commander saying, look, these are bad guys. We're fighting evil. He didn't define the evil. He didn't get emotional. He didn't put any...
He didn't pull an Afghan baby out of his pocket and chew its little head off with his bear-sharpened teeth.
Sorry.
Urgency behind his words, like if we lose, this is going to lead to more bloodshed all over the world. Let's wise up everybody and get in there and win it. I didn't see any of that. It was more like an academic speech.
Well, it was tired, and you're right. I mean, I think you might need a new teleprompter with some Energizer Bunny batteries in it.
Karl Rove, he's such a kidder.
Tonight was good news, but it was badly delivered in a weak frame. I appreciate what he did. The core of it was, we're going to surge in Afghanistan like we did in Iraq. I'm going to send 30 of the.
Wait a minute! Wait!
This is damning damning with faint praise. Where's the I will stand up and applaud part? Come on, Carl. Up, up, out of the chair. Up, Carl, up. Here's some bleeding raw meat. Hold it up above your head. Come on. Up, Carl, up. No, not so much.
40,000 troops that that McChrystal requested. But, you know,
I paused in the wrong place. Back up just a hair.
Any batteries in it. You know, at the core of tonight was good news, but it was badly delivered in a, in a weak frame. I appreciate what he did. The core of it was we're going to surge in Afghanistan like we did in Iraq. I'm going to send 30 of the 40,000 troops that that McChrystal requested. But, you know, reading the background briefing of the president.
Notice that? Well, he's going to send 30 of the 40,000 troops that McChrystal requested.
President's aides today to the press corps at West Point, I got more information about what they intended to do and how they intended to do it than I got from the president's
point.
He did not rally the country. He did not explain the stakes. He did not explain how he intends to do this. He did not, it was just the high points. I'm going to send 30 to 40,000 more troops. They're going to go over there and do something really important, and then I'm going to start withdrawing them in 18 months.
See, but I don't begrudge him the withdrawing, though, because I think the Afghans have to step up.
But look, here's the point. We are where we are today, and the question is, does it serve America's strategic interest for the President of the United States to say, I'm going to surge these additional troops there, and the enemy knows that we're going to send one quarter less troops than was requested by the military commander, and then for him to say, in 18 months, I'm going to start withdrawing those people. That sends a very, very bad signal to the enemy that you can wait us out. And when he ended on that note that, boy, we got to worry about our economy and about America and coming back and taking care of things here. Look, we're not the only people watching and paying attention to that speech. That strikes.
Yeah, that worrying about the economy in America and stuff. That's socialism. That's downright communism, that worrying about America part. Dang, Karl Rove, thank God you're there to set us all straight. Yeah, it's not like I'm trying to rub anybody's nose in it, but it is true. The decision to increase troops in Afghanistan is still dead wrong. And it'll be wrong the next time that McChrystal goes to him and says, well, boss, I asked for 40, you gave me 30. What I need's a million. Well, okay. All right. You need a million? I'll give you 500,000. Well, try to get by, Mr. President. It's just a little stunning. So coming forward into the present, there was a big jobs summit at the White House this afternoon. President Obama invited a number of economic leaders and labor folks and people like that, smart folks, to come and talk about how to fix this busted up economy. And coming out of that, well, let me just read you the lead from the Associated Press. President Barack Obama says a jobs forum he hosted at the White House generated many useful ideas for jump-starting job creation, some of which can be put into action immediately by his administration. The president said Thursday at the close of the jobs summit that other ideas will become part of legislation for Congress to consider. He said he was most struck by the overlap between the sessions on specific topics, leading him to conclude that job creation needs to be better coordinated. And he went on to say that the private sector has to be the lead engine in job creation. I kind of hated to read that because I know what comes after that. That is followed by blast faxes and full page ads taken out. By the usual suspects saying, well, if you want the private sector to create jobs, Mr. President, what you got to do is cut taxes. You got to cut them taxes. You cut them taxes, Mr. President. Give us, come on, cut them taxes. Because the only way we can ever make a job is if you cut our taxes, you see. because it's not true that we take all that money and stuff it in our pockets and then ship the jobs to China and Vietnam and Sierra Leone and places like that. Oh, hell no, we create jobs. Just don't tell him we're not creating them here. Don't smarten up the chump. You know that's coming. Because that's the way they... The jobless rate, by the way, is presently at 10.2%. And here's one of those little media moments. The story is covered on Time magazine. And one of the things that I love the way they write. It's just charming. Here's how Time writes about the current jobless problem. If voters are concerned about spending, they're even more worried about unemployment, which is at a 26-year high of 10.2%. Don't ask the American people to do math on the fly in their heads. 26 years and 10.2%? Too much math. The way you really write that sentence is, unemployment, which hasn't been this high since Ronald Reagan was president. Because you know what? Assuming that there are Americans out there still reading Dead Tree Time, they will look at it and say, what? But I thought Ronald Reagan was Jesus' best friend. He never had no unemployment. Yes. Yes, he did. And while what is going on here is god-awful, it is no worse, arguably, than what happened that Ronald Reagan did to us. And, of course, Ronald Reagan was followed by Ronald Reagan. George W. Bush, on the other hand, was followed by Barack Obama. It's just another one of those little times when Republican policies come home to roost. And they come home to roost not on the well-to-do, not on the silk stocking crowd. No, hell no. No, those vicious birds come home to roost on the backs of you and me. And it's a hard damn thing to deal with, isn't it? Oh, we've got an abundance of things to go into. Somewhere along the way, we've got to get into this Uganda business. Somewhere along the way, we've got to talk a little bit about what the the state senate of New York did to gay people. I saw one protest sign saying, I'm moving to Iowa. You know, if the gay population of New York City moved to Iowa, it would be the worst thing that ever happened to New York and the best thing that ever happened to Iowa. But we need to talk about that somewhere along the way. Still enshrining bigotry. You know, little baby empires, taking those toddler empire steps, it's just not so charming. Because that's the way empires behave, too. Let's go to the phones. About 19 minutes past the hour. You know the number, by the way, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, H-E-A-D-O-N, head on. You can reach Direct Dialwise at 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. And we will now go forward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you for taking my call.
I wait all night for calls like these.
I know you do. Just when I was just kind of reflecting on, I'm so grateful that I missed the prayer meeting and the preacher didn't show up and whatever. I just get Carl who rolled. Oh, my God, isn't he dead or something?
Yeah, don't we wish.
Well, I mean,
he's undead. You know, they hang him up by his heels every night and put him in a box with some native soil from the old country, that kind of thing.
And all that stuff. Now I understand why I don't have TV. Oh, God.
Yeah, basically, Karl Rove is the Renfield to Cheney's Dracula.
Yes, master.
God, oh, those guys. Oh, whatever. Iowa, huh?
Yeah. How you feel? Yeah. How you feel about Iowa?
Well, same way I feel about New York. I lived in New York and I lived in Montana. And it's just kind of like Iowa, so you know. I didn't really have anything on my agenda tonight, just except to just call in and say hi. And I'm still on the low desert in Arizona, recovering from whatever the hell hit me. I feel like I've been run over by one of those coal trucks on the mountainside. You know, them big ones, those monsters.
Well, you know, you can just stand on the side of the road and get passed by them and get sick from the dust blowing off of them.
I'm telling you, I've been there. They scared me to death. Oh, God. excuse me. God, it just left my mind. Oh, and I heard from Highlander. I've been in touch with her all the time. I told her I was leaving in October and heading toward Montana and Tacoma on the way to Highlander, and I know that you'd have to know me better to understand why that makes sense to go to Seattle and not to get to East Tennessee.
Hey, so, you know, Columbus wanted to get to India by sailing west, you know?
Whatever.
And you can sympathize.
I sure can. I missed the big river by many, many miles this trip. I just had to head south to get back to the desert. So anyway, I'm just pretty pumped about still, it's still my passion to get back there and sacred ground, and I'm getting good lessons in East Tennessee. I'm learning Big Orange, on Saturdays, and then I'm learning to speak Vince Young on Sundays, and you know, it's pretty fun stuff, huh?
Well, you know what? If you do get back there in time, and the thing is still going on, maybe you can slip down to Monroe County and be our Monroe County, Tennessee correspondent for the ongoing, treason indictment of Barack Obama by Commander Fred McMurray or whatever he is down there.
I know not what as you speak, but I don't know about being a correspondent either. That sounds like a what, Obama? Impeach him or what?
No. They're trying to, there's a loopy guy down in Monroe County, Tennessee, trying to indict Barack Obama in a Tennessee grand jury for treason.
Oh.
I mean, that would just that would have to be some of the highest entertainment of the year.
Sure not.
I mean, being as how, you know, a county grand jury can't indict for treason or anything.
But... Oh, right. That's why I'm going, I don't know what you're talking about. But anyway, so I could Google that, right?
it's out there somewhere, but you got to be careful because the crazy just drips off the page.
Is that Monroe County, Tennessee?
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay. I don't know how close that would be to... Of course, I can Google that, too. I do have an atlas. I can find my way to East Tennessee. And also, I wanted to... I suppose you still didn't even make half of November's contributions.
No, we had a couple of kind contributions come in to get December started, but no. Well, we wound up kind of halfway there for November.
That's what I was afraid of. I happened to be listening to some people talking the other day about midnight sales and all that stuff, and you know, and they're clearly underemployed or they work at Walmart or some crap. I don't know. Anyway, when I hear there just isn't any money, I don't have any money, I don't have any contribution, that gets me crazy because sometimes, some places, there is money. And it dawned on me today while I was mopping my floor that if people, since it's tis the season to be jolly, oh, come all ye fretful, you know.
There's one.
That's not mine. I stole it. When people are out shopping at the stores buying China junk for the kids and stuff, if people could just take 10% of whatever that purchase was going to be, even if it's a $25 one, and just put that aside, just tally that up, and then don't buy such an expensive item, and then send a little bit of money to PayPal or to the address on the webpage for contributions.
Yep.
For December. I mean, there is money. If you've got money to go in a store shopping for family and friends and people who don't appreciate Christmas and whatever. I was not going to go there. I didn't.
No, I understand. But, no, it's true. It gets a little sweaty because where we have been able to cover some costs out of our own hide because of things that are pressing down around here, around us, we're not going to be able to do that.
Right. I know, but I'm just saying that some people are able to do that. And if you're in the audience, if you're out there Christmas shopping, just cut back about 10% of what you were going to buy on that gift, that item, and put it in an envelope and send it. I remember because, well, it would only be $2.50. That's all the money I got. I remember Wayne saying one time, I think it was Wayne going to the mailbox, and he was brought to tears by a person's little contribution. I don't know if it was even $5. Maybe it was $5. The guy said, I'm pretty short, but I thought this time I could go without my popcorn for a week. So here's what I've got left. And Wayne said he just stood there and cried, you know, appreciation. So the contributions don't have to be big and elaborate, but, you know, if we bombarded the mailbox $2.50 or $5 bills or $10 bills to get you guys through the, you know, at least get the November bills paid. Because I'm telling you, it's anybody notice how bad it's gotten? How bad it's gotten? I mean, the world is getting crazier and crazier. And if we lose you and Malloy, Hartman's gone total corporate and doing GM cars and whatever. And NPR is all corporate, and they won't even cast aspersions on. Never mind. We don't have any voice anymore. And so if we lose you and Malloy, we are freaking toast. We're out here all by ourselves watching Fox News. You want Glenn Beck? You got Glenn Beck. Put your money back in your pocket. Anyway, I just wanted to...
Yeah, and you can think of me standing off somewhere with a cold mic, or nowhere near, the mic cold and me nowhere near it, standing off somewhere saying, "Welcome to Walmart. Want a buggy?
Have a good day." Oh, God. Yeah, I shudder. Anyway, and I don't have a thing to say about what's going on. You all know how I feel about the man in the White House, and I'm not surprised, and I'm disappointed that there was so much shock and awe after the speech. I mean, come on. Y'all knew it was coming. God. Anyway, so I'm going to hang up now and... wait for a better day when there's more to talk about and good news.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, no.
Well,
I noticed also on the webpage, it takes the webpage a half an hour to load on my computer, so I imagine I don't know what that's about. Whether it's because there's so much YouTube stuff or pictures or information, or it's gotten bigger, or if there's some kind of glitch behind the firewall or something, I don't know. But anyway, it took me a long time to get into the web page. I can't even get in most of the time. When I listen to archives, I mean, that's how I listen to the show, is archives, because I can't get in anywhere else. I mean, on the web page. So anyway, I just, it took a very, very long time this afternoon to get in. So I don't know if the internet's slow or if...
Well, I think there's still a link over at WhiteRoseSociety.org, too. That might
there
be.
Is, and it doesn't, the buffer doesn't load, and doesn't work. I'm not to listen to the show. So I just go to the archives every night after Mikey, and that satisfies me.
I think your boys at Verizon are laying down on the job a little bit, Kate.
Well, I have 4 bars. I mean, out of 5, I don't know what 5 would matter, so... Maybe it's my computer. Maybe.
Or it could be the bandwidth. I mean, you can have 4 bars of low bandwidth, and it's no help. But you know, that's. I mean, that's. It. Maybe I don't know. Maybe we can tech this out and diagnose it a little bit.
Because, you know, we run a low, low bandwidth stream that'll even run on dial-up.
Yeah, I remember that.
It's still there.
I don't have dial-up, though. Would it work on...
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you can run the... there's almost... that's what I'm getting at. There's almost nothing that won't run the dial-up stream.
I mean, if I logged on the dial-up stream using my broadband for Internet access, would it...
You should get it like that.
Oh, really? I thought you had to be on a modem to do that.
No, that's just, it's just really, really, really low bandwidth.
Oh, hell, well, okay. Sorry, audience, we're taking up all the time with the...
No, you know, we do tech support, too. This is, you know, this is an Internet-based program, Kate, and if we were terrestrial, there would also be time for, you know, push the button that says AM. Turn the dial to the right, or to the right, well past where it says Connell Rand.
There's a band of men in the trees, and
you know it. No, it's a full service radio show, for crying out loud.
Well, okay, thanks for the tech support. I'll probably just log off and shut everything.
Well, it might make listening to Malloy a lot easier too.
Oh, I hear him. I've got Sirius.
Oh, well, okay, yeah.
So,
that's true.
Oh, here's a question that somebody in the audience might answer, because I haven't heard back from them yet. Who pays for all of the Obama billboards or spots, whatever they're called, the little sound bites that come in over and over and over and over on AM Left 146 or whatever the left is on? Who pays for that time on Sirius?
Oh, that would be interesting. Not having Sirius, that's like telling me about, you know, goats wandering out of the pen. I mean,
how does a person get on Sirius? How does it? Do you have to pay?
Well, if they're ads, you obviously have to pay. If it's part of programming time, I mean, does it happen during a particular show?
No, it happens all the time.
That might just be part of their promo schedule. I mean, they think that,
they think they're freaking, okay, this is what I didn't want to tell them. If you think this is a public service announcement, I am sick of hitting my mute button, and I can't even threaten to cancel my subscription, because then there goes Malloy and, Canadian Broadcasting. Those are the only two things I listen to. Oh, except when I want music, but God, it's just, I'm just totally addicted to CBC because they're so different.
Well, I don't know if you can pull it off or not, but if you could sneak into the chat room for... Well, no. Never mind. No, back up. I will ask that these two links be emailed to me, and I will email them to you, and they are direct links to the dial-up stream.
Oh, I have them on the,
One is okay. KincaidModem.pls, and the other one is KincaidModem.m3u.
Well, just email them to me later when you've got time, so I appreciate it. Thank you for the tech support and for everybody. So anybody, you know, when you're out Christmas shopping, just put about 10% of what your purchase was going to be in an envelope and send it to West Virginia, because we sure do need to keep this mic hot. I don't want to keep harping on this, but I'll say it one more time. Without Malloy and Kincaid, we are toast out here in the wilderness, so...
Well, you have worked your magic once again, because $25 just kindly rolled in.
Well, thank you.
ELO tells me that she is emailing you these links even now as we speak.
Okay, she's home.
Yes. Oh, yes.
She's clearly not doing this from a hospital bed.
No.
Can you give me a brief update, or can I email her?
Probably best carried out between you two.
Okay. And what about our man Peter in Florida?
I emailed Peter some happy Thanksgiving greetings. Haven't heard back, but the last I heard from Peter, he said he was just continuing to recuperate and slowly getting better.
Yeah, cool. Is his partner okay? Home, family problems over with?
Well, no. Larry, I think, is still up. Is still up where Larry is.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Damn. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing the rest of the program on archives tonight. I'll just lose a little sleep. That's okay. I can sleep in.
And, you know, you're 3 hours behind us, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, or two. Are you two? I don't know.
I'm on the famous Mountain Standard Time.
Okay, so you're 2 hours behind.
Two, yeah. So anyway, say hey to everybody, and at some point you could probably play, Nightfly.
Okay, then. Yeah, we haven't heard the Nightfly in a while.
No, not since I called in October with pneumonia, which is getting a little bit better, but my vitality is still kind of in the toilet. I mean, I have bursts of energy and walked a quarter of a mile. Well, I can walk a quarter of a mile two or three times a week, and that's pretty good. But the rest of the time, I just want to kind of sit and stare. But I'm motivated to get to East Tennessee, so.
Well, don't hurry it along.
I won't. She said, take care, get well. Take care and get well. And when the universe moves you, we'll be here. So there you go.
Beautiful thing.
Sounds like I got a job, huh? Who'd have thought that, huh?
Hot diggity.
Yeah. All righty, then.
You're going to be the coolest librarian in East Tennessee.
Because I work for free. And I can speak big orange.
Hot diggity.
Check y'all later. Thank
you. Yeah, work on your Rocky Top now.
Oh, you know. Oh, boy. I could even... Yeah, never mind. I was going to go...
If you can't sing Rocky Top, they won't let you stay.
I was going to go someplace where Dolly is, and but I'm not even going to go there, so never mind. I don't want to get into that. Take care, y'all, and give my love to the redhead.
I sure will. We'll talk to you soon, Kate.
Okay, bye-bye.
Later. Bye. And we will get the Nightfly in here in a little bit. But at about, 23 and a half minutes before the hour, we will keep the phones rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert.
You knew I was coming. I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm just in defense mode of glorious leader Barack Hussein Obama, just because I'm so used to fighting with the hordes of ignorance on the Internet, with all the nonsense that we... are bombarded with. I guess one thing I can say is we have enough history that you know exactly where I stand on Afghanistan, and I've stood since before Bush invaded that place and carpet bombed it, so on and so forth. And as you certainly pointed out, the right wing always wants to do more. You know, why can't we have total war? Why can't we go in there and bomb and nuke and torture and murder and rape and pillage and do all those things that you know in their deepest heart of hearts they really want to do? Because they think that that's what won World War One and World War Two, without the clarity of knowing that World War One had a 5% civilian casualty rate and World War Two had around 11, not counting Holocaust-ish type things. I'm talking just battle. Iraq... Well, Vietnam was in the 70s, and we all know where Iraq is. It's even higher than that. In Afghanistan, let's see, we killed the equivalent, I remember keeping, just to keep track of the stat in my head, we killed the equivalent to what we lost on 9/11 in around 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So, and obviously we far surpassed that. But let's get, one thing to kind of get to is, I just got to say it. And even though, I'll play devil's advocate or what have you, but Barack Hussein Obama has not done the worst job in terms of cleaning up Bush's complete and utter catastrophe.
I would agree with you.
Okay. I just had to, had to do that. He certainly, is there room for improvement? Do I have to ask that question? We know that there's massive room for improvement. There are massive things that we have to accomplish. There are huge hurdles in just people's understanding of the issues that, need to be even tackled without, all of a sudden, some hacker stealing some emails that talks about a mathematical trick and a this and a that, and I'm sick and tired of these global warming deniers. Keep that bastard off the journal, and then that shows that the Arctic ice is even higher than it's ever been, right? No. We're still achieving a climate change. You see, they'll always talk about, and I remember telling you this 2 years ago or thereabouts. Remember I talked about sunspots and weather and how all of a sudden we're going to see the Earth start cooling down until we get back into this maximum. We're going to see this start cooling down, and what are the right wing going to say? No global warming, no blah, 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 blah. Well, solar cycle 24 is starting to kick back in. Now, granted, I'm in Wisconsin. I'm way up here. It's dark at 4. That's another reason I haven't been around, because every time I turn around, there's the sunlight. I turn around, and 6 o'clock looks like 9 o'clock, and I'm about ready for bed. So, you know, that completely, it's amazing. I mean, it is literally pitch black out here right now. Pitch black. And snow is falling. Like, unbelievable. It's just, I hate this weather. I got to go to the equator. Anyway, I just need more stability in my sun. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow.
Yes.
It's just, you know.
And I think I've got you a bumper for this evening, too.
Anyhow. You know,
we'll just get them all out of the way in one fell swoop here in a little bit.
Yeah, they're piling up. We got two. No, but seriously, honestly, we're sitting here looking at a literal, it's a huge mess. It's a giant mess, and, well, we've talked long enough to know that this was coming a long time coming. You know, we see job numbers now, and it's, you know, I knew it was at 10 already, but, you know, with all the, what do they call it, jiggermandering, what is that called?
Gerrymandering.
Yeah, all the gerrymandering of how they take you know, heed of these statistics, you know, by the Bush administration turning McDonald's jobs into manufacturing jobs, okay? Like, just, oh, yeah, they manufacture hamburgers because they don't really make the bastards. They just take them out, put them in...
I am a pickle placement engineer.
I mean, come on. Yeah, how's that degree treating you? I mean, you know, so we've had a long time of this long slide. They put every break they could on actually getting the real numbers. I hope, in a sense, I hope he becomes honest. I mean, one thing about, you know, just because I have to address this, and I'm going to get to Afghanistan, but, you know, I have to address this just because these are things that I've been warring with. You know, Barack Obama spent more money than blah, 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 right? And the biggest thing that just screams out in my head is, no, he's taking into account the Bush administration's wars that they didn't feel like, you know, I mean, come on. Bob, I don't know if who or what in your household, but I'm sure this is familiar to anybody listening. One, the husband either has the card or the checkbook or the wire, right? And when you have that kind of team, like right now, well, I don't like writing personally, so I'd rather have the card. It's a little easier for me, and, you know, it's easier to keep track of the kids when I'm doing all that. So I have the card, the wife has the checkbook. The hell and fury that rains down on my head if I don't tell her if I spent $12 here and $24 there is unbelievable. And we all know why, because when we're talking about people in our economic class, we're talking about people that if we do not keep a track of these $12 and $24 charges, well, the bank can just say, well, you know, we'll hold that until we don't have any money. Oh, we're going to clear it, and next thing you know, boom, 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 and you get all these non-sufficient funds, and you owe them $300. And they like to play that game. You know that. Everybody who's in our economic spectrum knows that. You know, if you're rich enough not to notice, then you're not in that class. So, anyhow, I don't understand how anybody can even attempt to never address that whole topic. When we talk about the money that a Barack Obama is spending, Bush didn't count, and I don't, you know, I want to drop an F-bomb here. He didn't count the wars. Two wars he didn't count.
Off the books.
Off the books. Paid for with money borrowed from China. You know, and I can understand outrage on Barack Hussein Obama, okay? Granted, as long as you don't talk about birth certificates and how he's a reincarnated pharaoh and a clone being from some crazy New World Order, you know, laboratory somewhere in Area 51, if you don't start talking like that, I can try to maintain some level of calmness and not go completely haywire, you know, because we all knew, and it was hammered home as to where Barack Hussein Obama would be when he named Rahm Emanuel, which makes me sick.
Now, yeah, that was kind of a little tip-off, wasn't it?
It was. That was my first initial, the balloons deflated, okay?
Of course Obama will be a friend to Israel. It's not like he's some Arab scrubbing the floors. Remember that one?
Anyhow. Yeah, we know who that is. We know who that is. And it's family. It's people eating. It's probably kids listening. You know, I can rattle them off, and I don't want to. But, so I'm going to have to use different vocabulary.
You're going to work at it.
I'm going to try. And, you know, we sit here listening to this and listening to that and all this other nonsense when, you know, I don't know if you know this or not. And it may not be every bill that I'm completely, you know, flipping it upside down and doing somersaults for, because he's got a lot more bills to sign that have a lot more meat to him. Okay, he just, that's just in the cards for him. But when we sit here and look, this man has signed 14 bills or 13 bills. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Bush signed 3 in his first year or first 10 months or what have you. But one of the things that, you know, one thing about the Bush administration that I just have to readdress, you know, besides that they didn't account for the wars and stuff like that, is they did so many outrages. There's so many of them that you forget. We forget. When was the last time you heard Enron talk about in terms of California's budget crisis?
Oh, you mean with specifically within those terms?
Yeah.
Well, no, never. Never. Not.
Yeah. No, it doesn't happen. Yeah, when Bush came in, and everybody forgets this, right? We're still in the halcyon days of Clinton, right? The best Republican president this country's ever had. Now, and that's the truth. He was. Excellent. I could deal with a Republican like him more than I could deal with a Republican scum like Bush or McCain or Palin and these people. I mean, if anybody here, here's one thing to go look at. If you don't want to hear me ramble, go to The Onion and watch how the GOP resurrected Ronald Reagan and he's the zombie Ronald Reagan. Go watch that. No, that's just...
First yeah, zombie but, reference of the evening, Albert.
I had to. Well, it's been a while. And, yeah, the prayers haven't been answered yet. But anyway... because, you know, that's almost our only hope sometimes, someday.
Zombies.
I like to be hopeful. You know, I got my silver paint, and I'm not huffing it. I'm just putting it on the clouds, these dark clouds.
Right, right.
Because it is.
But the fumes can still get to you a little bit here and there. I mean, no matter how careful you are. The fumes can still get you no matter how careful you are.
Yeah, they do, don't they? Yeah, I hope not. Anyhow.
Well, let me just throw a couple your way, just for the sake of discussion and fun. These are some dueling quotes from over at BartCop. Obama Tuesday night. We did not ask for this fight. George Bush. We did not seek this conflict. Barack Obama. New attacks are being plotted as I speak. George Bush. At this moment, terrorists are planning new attacks. Barack Obama Tuesday night. Our cause is just, our resolve unwavering. George Bush. Our cause is just, our coalition determined. Barack Obama. This is no idle danger, no hypothetical threat. George Bush. The enemies of freedom are not idle. It's a little disturbing.
Okay, now hang on, though. I hope you know what I'm going to say. What is Barack Obama very good at?
Speechifying.
Speechifying, right? And I'm calling what he's good, really good at. I'm going to call it political jujitsu. This is why I kind of laugh when people talk about how, oh, he's going to be the next Jimmy Carter. He's not. he's, you know, when I hear those terms, I heard those terms. But, you know, there's some other quotes that Barack Obama had in that speech that George Bush never would have even come 10 light years with him.
Oh, true. Those were the things that Karl Rove was having a hissy about, Albert, saying that he was weak and half-hearted, you know, because, again, he didn't pull an Afghan baby out of his pocket and chew its head off.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
But I'm sorry. I've still got a lot. Because the fact of the matter is, there's a great column, and it's well worth the effort. Cindy in Washington sent it along to me, over at Open Left by David Sirota. The title of it is, How Do You Ask a Man to Be the Last to Die for President Obama's Political Image? And there are...
Can we just pause there? Can
yes.
We just pause there for 1 second?
Sure.
Because now I have to say my point. Of, you know, I heard what you said, and I understand where you're coming from. I absolutely do. But just recall, I have always been against Afghanistan.
Right.
There was no point in no way, shape, or form. I understand it made you upset that they destroyed the Buddhas, and the Buddhist in me gets upset about that history. You know, because then we lose the whole track of Jesus going out there and all that. So anyway, but, you know, let's not get to that level.
Yeah, that's Wednesday.
We'll talk about that Wednesday. And I look forward to that. So anyway, because I think that's one of those things. And I'm trying to meet my kids and the evangelical stuff with the in-laws, and so I kind of have to try to trying to figure out how to frame it for five-year-old mind. But anyway, that's my little task at the moment. We're talking about Afghanistan. We went in there, carpet bombed the hell out of them. You know, we're all gung-ho about it. You know, we failed here and there, left and right. And the real aspects of the failures, it's the same failures that were in Iraq, is when we went into Iraq, who did we send to fix the bridges? Did we send money and materials? No. We sent corporations, which then used price cost plus to order the materials.
Right.
And send our, you know, that was our way to kind of boost unemployment or something ridiculous like that, you know, or to keep, you know, people from losing their, you know, McMansions or whatever it is, you know, a plumber living in a, you know, $500,000 house in this gated community. Yeah, okay. Anyway, you know, we sit there and we look at that and we see Afghanistan. Obviously, it's slid off the radar because we all know what the hell we went in Afghanistan for. We went in there for the UNICAL pipeline. We didn't go in there to liberate anybody or to educate any women or to bring any freedom whatsoever to these people. Now, one interesting thing, and I believe it was you who brought it up, is that the Afghans already sort of have a democracy. It's a very primitive form, but it is a form of democracy where all the people get together, they vote their village elder to go see whom, and they say they appoint.
Yeah, the Loya Jirga principle.
Yes.
In fact, oddly enough, Denis Kucinich has been trying to educate the public on that principle. I don't know how much luck he's having with it.
Who's loyal? What? Talking like a fag.
Well, no. Well, exactly. There's a clip out there, as a matter of fact, and I think it's at Kucinich.us or something. Mm-hmm. There's a clip of him talking to highly telegenic spokeshead Anderson Cooper.
Mm.
And Anderson's got his squinty face on, so you can tell he's really paying attention to Dennis.
Yeah, yeah.
And at one point, Dennis brings up the issue. He says, you know, the Taliban's not going to be able to get a foothold back in there because the Taliban got a foothold the first time through because there was a collapsing central government and that had already eradicated the millennia-old structure that was already in place, the Loya Jirga. And he mentions Loya Jirga, and he says, you know, and with functioning Loya Jirgas over there, the Taliban will not be able to get a foothold. To which Anderson Cooper, telegenic spokeshead, really, really supposedly smart TV news guy, responds, well, yes, Congressman, but even if those loyal Jirgas are... Now, bear in mind, the word is Loya. Second word is Jirga. And highly telegenic spokeshead Anderson Cooper has just turned it into an issue of whether or not they are loyal to us.
Okay.
If he had followed up by saying, brought to you by Carl's Jr., it couldn't have been plainer.
I heard somewhere that they were going to start paying people to say advertisements. I'll have to go find the story again. This was a couple weeks back. I'll send it to you. I'll Gmail it to you.
You know, I think after as much as we've done, we've got a right to send Carl's Jr. a bill. But that's okay because President Not Sure is out there hustling for AT&T wireless now. I don't know if you've noticed or not. No, you haven't.
I don't. Well, you know me. I've killed television a long time ago.
Yeah.
I don't mind a couple of programs here and there, but it's the commercials.
Yeah, Joe's put on some weight, and he's throwing postcards around a big map of the United States.
Anyhow, back to Afghanistan.
Yeah, right, sure. Sorry.
Right. Now, here's my silver lining. Here's my hope. Here's what I do hope that he's a black belt in political jujitsu. Jimmy Carter wasn't. But Barack Obama is. And what I'm hoping is one thing that is true, without a doubt, is we have a huge mess over there. Now, am I afraid of people? No, I'm not afraid of that. I ain't worried about that. I don't sweat terrorists or terrorism. I think if you really wanted to pay attention, you don't ignore the red flags, number one. You know, you try to make sure, you know, your borders are somewhat secure, number two. You know, all these kinds of little things that we can get into in other days, okay? There's a bunch of different ways that we can keep the whole land, and you know how much I love that term, but we can keep it safe, right?
Yep.
Now, blah, 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 blah. We're sitting here looking at Afghanistan. What I would like to see is, if we're going to use true, we have to clean this mess. It's a mess. We clean it. We have to. On principle. And that's why, in a sense, when this is what gives me hope and it gives me the gall to say this, is when he does talk about, hey, and by 2011, we're out. Right? Are we completely out? No, we won't. We'll still have here and there, little bases and so on and so forth. But another thing about me in terms of the internet is I plunge deep into the tubes. You know, and there's tons of video. Guys, go to LiveLead. You'll see so many videos of Apache gunships and all these other things. You can't hide from these things. Our military, we spend so much money, and it's a good thing. I mean, if you're going to talk about who wants the best toys, it makes me sick that we spend all this money, but we do have some toys. These people can't escape from us, okay? And if there are certain regions here and there, we go, okay, you see this region here, this valley here, you have X amount of time to give this and that, or total war is committed on this area. People that are villagers, they'll leave. People that are, they'll give up. They'll do these things and realize, in the sense that if we go in there with the stick that we have to go in there with, we have it. We have to go in there with it. What are we going to do? Not use it? Stand there impotent? We can't. We can't. And it's not me. You think I want this? I don't want this. I never want to go to the freaking first place. But the problem is we're there and there's a fire. And we have to contend with it. And in a sense, if we play our cards correctly, and we don't make any massive blunders, and we don't worry about, you know, doing the horrible things that we've done in the past under Bush, and we do this with a different hand, with a different set of gloves on, okay, with some real structure and infrastructure building in this.
Can I call time for a second?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. And again, not trying to rain on your parade either, but the guy who's running this show, it ain't new gloves. It's old gloves that have been whitewashed. Because the guy who's running this show is the guy who whitewashed the friendly fire killing of Pat Tillman.
True.
I wouldn't trust him with the corpse of a squished skunk.
Oh, and this is, but that goes without saying. These are government people, okay? What I'm kind of saying is that I would like to see not just troops. Okay, I would like to see, and I would hope that Barack Obama's jujitsu is honed enough to realize that even though the Karzai government is disgusting, okay, we have to do is build an infrastructure, not to support them, but underneath them to support.
Yeah, oh, see, you and Kucinich, you're on the same page with your loyal Jurgas.
Well, exactly. Oh, absolutely.
And you know, and it's the same thing we've said a million times over with government trying to impose, there's that word, change on government here. Quit running people for Congress. Quit running people for president. Quit running people for governor. If you're a devoted third party type, for Christ's sakes, get out there and run for county surveyor. Get out there and run for alderman. Get out there and run for county commission.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing higher than your state legislature. Run for prosecutor if you're a lawyer.
Yep, school board.
School board. Oh, hell yes, school board.
Yeah. Get on there. You know, when they try to sit there and remove Huck Finn, you sit
stick
there.
Stick it in them and break it off.
Yeah. No. Hang on. Maybe we should read the prologue. You know, I mean, I'll give him the disclaimer. We'll read Mark Twain's prologue and how he explains how he uses the language in this book. Have you read that part? Because if you read that part, that makes the whole other part a little bit more.
Kind of makes it makes it a little more make sense and stuff. Yeah, well, I know.
The narrative of a character.
No, well, you know, you're tapping into something, Albert, that I think is interesting insofar as our friend Dwayne Hunn, who was on the show a couple of months back talking about the American World Service Corps principle that he has. I had an email from him saying, you know, if we're going to do this surge, then let's surge in 100,000 American World Service Corps workers.
Absolutely.
No guns?
Nope.
Lots of shovels?
Yep.
Lots of wheelbarrows?
Mm-hmm.
Lots of willingness to learn language?
Yeah.
Let's
send a garbage warrior.
Yeah.
Let's teach these people how to build homes out of the local resources in a more efficient way, that they can have air conditioning naturally. They can have clean water. They can have this and that. And then they don't have to worry about a lot of these things that they do currently have to worry about. Let's send him in there. What's his name? Mike?
Yeah, I've got the film here.
Let's do that. Let's pay up some people to pound dirt into tires, because you know there are a bunch of ruined vehicles out there. I'm sure there's plenty of tires bouncing around. Let's get some stuff. Let's exactly do that. That was my point. And I understand why you're upset about going into Afghanistan. I understand this whole concept of Jesus. I remember talking to you, we talked about this for hours in terms of empires, in terms of what this country was sitting in terms of an empire under George W. Bush. You know, and one thing, I mean, granted, I know it's the new boss, same as the old boss, there's more pepper in this one. It's a tiny little bit different. And with that tiny little crack, right, you know, one of my main issues is, because I've seen it firsthand in my life, one of my big issues, because it's symbolic to a lot of things as well, is medical marijuana. Now, we all see these reports coming out showing, oh, wow, it does have this, it does have that. Even the American Medical Association, after 70 years of saying, oh, it's not, you know, it's a one of them degenerates.
Mother stabbers, father rapers.
Yeah, exactly. Now, all of a sudden, now the American Medical Association is talking about how it does have medicinal effects. And it does without no doubt, there is no question about this. It's been a medicinal plant with human beings ever since we've discovered it. So period, end of story, that's what it is. So one of these things that we're seeing is now Pennsylvania is talking about medical marijuana. And you see, to me, this is symbolic. Because we're almost to the point to where we're completely cracked in half in terms of a country that has, you know, from sea to shining sea. We need a couple more here in the middle of this country. We've got Minnesota and a couple more. Boom, we'll have a nice crack through that line, and we'll end this stupid hypocrisy as well. But the thing is you always got to consider is if we're going to sit here and end hypocrisy like that, this is why it's symbolic to me, then, of course, naturally, if we're going to go into a country and nation build, we're going in there with shovels. We're going in there with solar panels, which, beautiful article on the homepage, and I knew it was coming, you knew it was coming, and we haven't even seen the very tip of it yet. Because remember those technologies you talked about? You brought up the nano layer, and I brought up the black silicone. Remember all that?
Yes, indeed.
Well, solar panels, as they sit now, are 50% cheaper than they were at the start of 2008. That's now, right now. No, not now, right now. And if these things start producing, this is where we're going to have to go with the job. And this is another reason why I have to go on this tangent. What jobs? You know what jobs we need. We need to secure our energy infrastructure. If you don't want to believe in global warming, fine. Don't believe in it. Whatever. I don't care. It doesn't matter. Do you want to pay $1,000 a kilowatt hour because the president decides to deregulate something that, you know, so the company figures, oh, they got you by the short and curly, so they're going to charge the state $1,000 a kilowatt hour? You think the state's going to pass that on to grandma? No, of course not. So they're going to cover it, and they're going to suck it up, and they're going to get their little, next thing you know, they're in billions and billions of dollars of debt, and Arnold Schwarzenegger's now your governor. Yeah. So, you know, and now they're even more billions of dollars in debt. You know, these are things, you want to talk about messing around in the Arab world. My goodness gracious. You know this, Bob. The amount of sunlight that hits the planet for 1 minute, just the surface land mass, is
sure
enough to meet the entire needs of humanity for 1 year. That is a massive amount of energy. We are swimming in energy. But we got to go and stick our noses in these places that have, you know, man, maybe they don't like us inherently. What have you? Whatever it is, I don't even want to get into that aspect of it. What doesn't matter? I'm sure they wouldn't care of us if we didn't go over there and mess around with them every 10 years or so. All right, you know what I mean? And do their little black operations and overthrow their democratically elected, you know, presidents and so on and so forth. You know, if we were energy free, in a sense, you know, because there's enough energy, we could tap Yellowstone. That geothermal energy doesn't run out, does it? And if that geothermal runs out, we're doomed. You know,
time to build the spaceship. Time to build the escape pods.
Exactly. Let's go. Let's out of here because the sun's going to go out. When's that going to go out? Well, we don't got to worry about it. These are things like, you know, in a sense, and you know me and my Star Trek, I'm a dork. You know, I like my Star Trek universe and all that stuff. And I haven't taught my kids Klingon because I don't know Klingon. But, you know, at the same time, when we're sitting here looking at a future like that, with science fiction, you know, people, come on now. Science fiction always paves the future. That's our golden brick road of, you know, through the collective consciousness of people. So if we're going to sit here and look at what started, what did they do? Right? Money's gone, right? Everybody has for anything that they want. Why? Because the Earth has these resources available to us. We can't have this stuff privatized, and you know as well as I do, we've talked about this economic system. This economic system's doomed.
Why do you think I got a big howling case of the creeps when President Obama came out of his the jobs summit today and said that it was going to be the province of the private sector to, you know, get out there and create them jobs? I can smell a nasty screaming howl for tax cuts for miles now.
Oh, Hank, they can scream all they want, but what we really need, and what he, and I hope this is what he's smart enough to realize, and this is what pops into my mind, because I'm out here in rural Wisconsin. Okay, our big corporations are gone. They're done. I mean, we have empty warehouses out here. Private sector, when I hear that now, see, I think what we're getting to a point is we already know that without a shadow of a doubt, the unemployment rate is not 10%. It's not 12%.
No, it's like 20.
It's much, much, it's 17, 18 range. Okay? Well, how can you say that, Albert? Because for the entire time that I've been talking to you on the horn, I haven't had a job other than raising my kids. That's how I can tell you that.
I know
for a fact.
Yeah, I had an email the other day from one of our regulars. Who said, you know, today is a very grim anniversary for me. 2 years. 2 years. No job after a 20-year career.
Hmm.
And, you know, nowhere near retirement.
No. My kids are almost six. My kids are almost six. You think I count? I don't count. And I know for a fact I'm not alone. I have friends that have done the same exact thing. We sat there, we looked at our... We looked at what we had. We looked at what we needed. We sat there and we said, you know what? If we're going to do what we're going to do, then we have to do what we have to get done. And what's one of the things that was missing in our lives? A father. What was one of the things that we would have liked to see more of? Right? A father. Or a parent, a stable structure. So that's what we're doing. We're taking our priorities, and that's what I'm also trying to say, is that our priorities are going to wind up start shifting. Okay, we're going to have to start taking some more traditional type values that are very important that shouldn't be lost. That, you know, children do need a family to grow up in, right? I'm totally, right? And you can only afford what you can afford to have to raise these children. You know, if we're going to sit here and look at jobs and private sector nonsense, well, we're sitting here looking at unemployment like this, like, and this is the other thing. I don't need a job, technically. I'm not going to go work at a job just so I can pay for child support, number one. That's why would I do that? I can spend time with my kids, or I can send them to, you know, learn all these horrible habits and have some lady sitting in front of a TV all day. I don't think so. I'm teaching my kids, they understand the equator, they understand who the president is and what city they live in and all those other things, and they can almost find them on a map, okay? So, you know, they know we're north of the equator, and that makes me proud that they even understand what that is. You know, they were asking me why it was all cold today, so I was explaining thermodynamics and all that other stuff is, you know, as dumbed down as I can make it. But, you know, if we went out there and asked my kids, well, why is it cold? And they say it was an absence of heat. Right? And that's just right there and then, for a 5-6-year-old, that's enough for me. You know what I mean? So I sit there and I look at this, back to this private sector issue. There's people like me out here that right now are doing things that inspire them. I have no desire to go, hello?
I'm here. Hello? Oh, no. I think Albert? I think Albert's phone has done its... Maybe we'll hear back from Albert. I know exactly what he's talking about. And I understand completely. And my problem is that some of these things that have to happen, it almost seems as if it is impossible that they can happen for so long as we're busy playing Junior Empire. If you know what I mean. Maybe this is Albert ringing back in. Maybe it was different phone time. Let's just see here in a second. Is that you, Albert?
Yes, Brother Bob. I'm sorry about that. I was starting to get on a tangent here. I don't know what the last thing I rambled out was, but really just quickly, the whole point is that I was getting at was, you know, like, I'm not going to work to pay for my child just to go to some daycare and sit in front of a TV all day long.
Right. Well, you know, we have that discussion around here, too, because we're very rural.
Mm-hmm.
And, frankly, some minimum wage job, you're going to be working to work.
Yep, pretty much.
You know, the whole paycheck goes to
do something.
The whole paycheck pays for gasoline or you know,
yep.
Our kids are a little bit older than yours, but... We have been engaged in that calculus, and frankly, you know, when I look at what we've got to deal with in our real so-called real world,
mm-hmm.
sometimes Albert, I look at Agnes and I go, "How's this sound, honey? Welcome to Walmart."
Mm-hmm.
She goes, oh, no.
Company store right there. That is the company store.
Sure it is. Probably. And it's also the only place around here I would have even so much as a prayer of getting a job. And you know what? I probably wouldn't because I would be deemed overqualified. I'd have to fill out the application and lie about the college degree and lie about and no, never got anything postgraduate. You know, maybe put high school dropout on it and try to pretend that I'm fairly, you know, that I'm just an autodidact.
But there's no future there. There is no future at Walmart. And the thing is when Obama talks about private sector, there's nothing he could do that could put a wedge between, except for FEMA camps. You know, without the FEMA camps, there's nothing Obama can do to put a wedge between me and my children, which inspire me to be a better person, to do everything correctly, to teach them the real ways in terms of just life in general. And here we are spinning on this planet through space. You know, if he cannot offer me, or if he doesn't put proposals that offer me some sort of inspiration, well, I'm not going to budge. If you put out some initiatives that train people to put solar panels up on roofs, because we're going to have a national push to do something like that, sorry, children, we're going to have to go with, you're going to go stay with crazy grandma or something like that. I mean, that's what it'll, I mean, I would actually do that because it would inspire me. That would be something that I know that even if I was to die doing some windmill 200 feet up and fall down at the last moment of my existence, I would be happy to know that we were working on something that's going to leave this planet in a better shape and in better hands in this country in a more controllable fashion for my children than was left to me. And I think that, in a sense, that should be our basics in terms of what we want out of life, is that we should always want to leave it better for the future. You know, we might not be here, and, hey, the Buddhists might be right, and we might come back here. You know, I would kind of like to see some sort of twist of that. I can't wait till George W. Bush is a cockroach in my my kitchen.
You've even learned to dead on the Bill Hicks laugh, peace be upon him.
Oh, man. No, seriously, I want to be inspired. That's what I want.
Yeah, and we talk about Obama being a great speech maker, but you know what? Not really. Not really. The soaring rhetoric of an FDR or a JFK or an MLK or an RFK, it ain't there. We haven't had soaring rhetoric in a generation.
No. But in a sense, maybe that's what the Internet's for. Like, and, you know, honestly, and you know I've been doing these Internet wars for a very long time. And it's so much easier now than it was. It's so much easier now. It really is. And it's not just because I go to the easy spots. I'm looking for prey. I'm looking for minds that I can either make an example of.
You're looking for zombies.
I'm zombie hunting one way or the other. Exactly. And I mean that they're going to see the fallacy. Other people will read it and see the fallacy in that type of thinking. You know, I heard an interesting, you know, and this is one thing you might be surprised about me. You know, when I was younger, I was more conservative. I really was. I was a very conservative person. And a couple of my friends also were saying, when I was young, you know it. Why? Because we're self-centered when we're young. And, you know, it's not everybody, but a lot of us were. But then we did something that separates us from being conservative and not being conservative, and being somebody that goes, liberal, why is that word such a bad word? Well, that's not a bad word. That's a pretty damn good word. I like that word. That describes me way better than con. Ugh. Right? When we sit there and listen to that, one thing that we developed was critical thinking skills. You see? And I believe, maybe that's that word again, but I believe that everybody has these switches in their body. You know, maybe some have less than others, but everybody's got a little bit of the switch. And if you can, I've been, catapulting the propaganda for years, and I'm not alone. There's thousands of us out here doing that because we really do care. And we do want to see inspirations. So maybe that's our job. Maybe it's not Barack Obama's job to do that. What Barack Obama's job is to listen to us. That's his job. And I know we're not quite there yet, and I hope he's at least halfway kind of conscious of realizing that. But that's the first politician in a very long time that even remotely listens to us or even remotely addresses our grievances. I mean, come on. I mean, what? Bill Clinton didn't listen to his base either, people. He didn't listen to the left wing. That's why Ralph Nader got such a big vote in the Gore election, because he didn't listen to us. And they didn't sit there and do these things that we felt, you know, they sat home and not voted. And see, that's a scary thing what Obama's doing is we
Well, I, you know, we haven't talked in a while. And I don't know. Maybe you weren't even listening the other night, the darkness being what darkness is. But, you know, there's that Daily Coast poll that came out a couple of days ago that just makes my blood run cold on the one hand. And on the other, I go, yeah, well, and why would they? That says that at present, 40% of the Democratic the Democratic vote says they're going to take a powder.
Yep.
And
it's scary.
It's terrifying because
it shouldn't scare you and me.
No, it's terrifying to the Democratic power elite. But you know what? If we think it's frustrating now, oh rats. If we think it's frustrating now, with the glacial pace of reform and so-called change, wait till you see Barack Obama trying to operate Bill Clinton style with a hostile Congress, stopping everything for impeachment proceedings on whether or not he's actually Barry Sotoro. Oh, just wait for that. That's going to be a real, real merry-go-round ride in the funhouse. Let's roll along here. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Hello? Okay, you're going to have to turn your speakers down. Hello? That's hello?
Yeah, hey, Bob, can you hear me?
I hear you fine.
All right. Hold on a minute here. There you are.
Yeah, here I am.
I had the devil of a time getting through to you on my dime, so I had to call you on your dime.
Oh, that's fine. I kept trying to take the call. You know, I just have this string of blinking lights, and I kept punching the button, and it kept going away.
There is something strange going on with the phones. I'm glad you're in that.
Were you getting? Tell me this. At any point, did you get a fast busy? We'll do some quick tech support.
I got some really weird background music. And a couple other times, it just hung up. It wouldn't the call wouldn't come.
Okay, I got to call CityNet. Need to know that. Thanks for Furbo. Yeah.
I never heard you. I never heard Albert. I never. But you know, this is just. You know what's happening, and so do I. So let's just keep it under our hats.
Yeah, let's.
It's those satellites. But you were talking about. What were you talking about? Now I'm all confused. We could just go here. Today is December 3rd, and it's a bit of an anniversary that I had completely forgotten about.
I had not. If we're talking about the same anniversary.
25 years ago today, something happened.
Yes, it did.
Something hideous.
Nothing that really, yeah, something horrendous. Something that was the worst thing like it to happen since they dug the Hawk's Nest Tunnel here about 5 miles from me. Because up until what happened 25 years ago today, the Hawk's Nest Tunnel disaster was the single worst industrial disaster that ever happened on the planet that we're aware of.
Did this disaster... the Hawk's Nest disaster, was there any kind of accountability for it? Did it get kind of cleaned up?
Not only was there no accountability for it, it was perpetrated by the same company, Reverbo. Gauley Bridge, West Virginia, was known as the town of the living dead. We learned a new word out of it called occupational pneumoconiosis. That's where you breathe the crap that kills your, that turns your lungs into concrete, and you die while it happens. No, there was no accountability, and in fact, in about 1941, a man attempted to write a novelized version about it
that was about to be released to great fanfare, and the company lawyers got hold of the publisher and said, you let this out and we'll make your life a living hell. And it never came out. And now, the Hawk's Nest tunnel disaster that used to be marked by a historic marker right on the side of the road where everybody could see it,
yeah,
is now relegated to a side path down a trail that you have to park and walk to go and see. We are talking about Union Carbide, of course.
Of course. And, you know, how do you like that? They were involved in the same disaster I'm talking about.
Yes.
Yeah, and let's see. In the one I'm talking about, of course, the one I'm talking about involved a bunch of people who weren't white, who lived
or not even American.
Nah, they lived really far away, and they were just mostly just, you know, scum. They didn't.
Right, but 3,500 of them did die instantly.
Instantly. Sometimes some people say 4,000 instantly died as soon as they breathed.
And it's breathed the Union Carbide poison.
Uh-huh. And then, of course, the death toll now.
And 20,000 and more have died since.
With, recurring birth defects and just awful things. And you know how come? Because nobody cleaned it up. No, a couple of guys in suits showed up in court one day and wrote a check and then left. But they didn't clean it up.
No, they didn't. We are, of course, talking. Let's go ahead and let the cat out of the bag. We're talking about Bhopal. And Bhopal happened on December the 3rd, 1984, and to this day, no one has been held accountable for it.
The Dow Chemical skate, their reason is it works for me. It's sort of like they bought Union Carbide. They bought the company, but they conveniently decided not to buy the mess the company made.
Right.
I didn't know you could do that. So it's sort of like I buy a boat that has four holes.
But you don't buy the holes.
No, but instead of fixing the holes, in addition to that, I arrange to give people, like, rides around the bay in the boat full of holes, and the boat sinks and they die. Something like that.
Yes. And then when they sue you, Reverbo says, I didn't buy the holes in that boat. It's not my fault you drowned.
Oh, here's what I say. I'll say what Union Carbide said. I'm reading it right off of the net. They said the accident was an act of sabotage by a disgruntled employee who was never identified and not the result of lax safety standards that those activists had always claimed. Somehow or other, that allows you to just get out of the hole.
Well, see, that's what you have to say in India, because here it's a monotheistic culture and there it's polytheistic, and here you can send out your dark-suited conscienceless lawyers who say act of God, because we're used to act of God here in Appalachia, Reverbo, believe me, we are.
Yeah.
But if you try that in India, they look at you and say, which one? We will find him. So they have to blame it on a saboteur. You know, a Frenchman with a wooden shoe who throws his wooden shoe, his sabot, into the machinery.
Okay. Now explain to me how that relieves you of your liability. Who gives a damn what the reason was?
Well, it really doesn't, especially where one is dealing with, what are the magic words here in West Virginia? Ultra-hazardous, inherently dangerous materials. You want the punchline to this joke, though?
Uh-huh.
I know that they blamed the unknown saboteur who was never caught in India. But how, then, do you explain the fact that the last... Now, you can't make methyl isocyanate in India anymore.
Well, you're good.
Well, there's a reason, Reverbo. The site of that Union Carbide plant has never been cleaned up, as you note. It is a toxic waste dump. Every bit of ground is absolutely chock-a-block with toxic waste. Mercury, lead, nickel, other funsies are there.
and the secretions are into the water table, and they are polluting water for countless miles around. So you can't make methyl isocyanate in India anymore. Lucky for India, there are hillbillies.
Yeah.
Because they make it 50 miles from me. They still make it. Now, granted, it went from being Union Carbide to being, oh, God, what was the name of the plant or the name of the company? But it's not that anymore either. Now it's Bayer Crop Sciences.
Well, that sounds kind of harmless. That sounds okay.
Yeah, it's an aspirin factory. At Institute, West Virginia, sitting right next door to the state's historically African-American institution of higher learning, West Virginia State. The white bread private college in West Virginia sits next to the Capitol. The historically black college sits next to Bhopal.
Might as well be.
And here, wait. Here's the fun part. Here's the cherry on top of the cowgirl, as Tom Robbins once said. A year ago this past August, the Bayer Crop Sciences plant caught fire. And a couple of people died. When Kanawha County, which is the county in which the plant sits, when Kanawha County Emergency Services, you know, the 911 guys, the guys who control it, hey, get over there, the first responders. When they called the plant says, what's going on? We hear there's a fire. The guy on the other end of the line at the plant says, I have not been cleared to tell you anything by corporate. The fire was within minutes of reaching the methyl isocyanate compound.
Oh, boy.
And no one would have had a chance.
I guess it's like nerve gas or something.
It makes nerve gas look like a walk in the park.
It's nice to know that as the flames are getting close to the nerve gas tanks, that corporate is still deciding how to spin it.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to run it. Look, you got your guy there at the phone, and you got your guys in the spokescreep department, and you got legal. And you've got shareholder relations. Now, how are they supposed to get all that information and have a meeting and make a determination all within the time that it takes to tell 15 or 20,000 people how not to die?
And they can't hear anything with all those EMT guys and all those fire engines pounding on the door. They would just shut up for a minute so we could have a meeting.
There you go.
So, okay, this is good. So we have just covered... had a nice example covering the industrial component of the military-industrial machine.
Yeah, that is true.
Now we can head over and cover the military component.
Oh, wait. Before we go away, can I tell you the other funny part?
Oh, yeah. It's hilarious so far.
Yeah, this part's a real knee-slapper. The part of the plant, the part of the Bayer plant that did burn was the part of the plant where they make all the stuff that kills off all the honeybees that contributes to beehive collapse syndrome.
It does get funnier.
Now, I'm sorry, you were saying?
No, in a different universe, you and I are clearly on the wrong side. There's good reasons why we are getting nowhere. And
David in Tennessee notes that, 4,000 died then, another 20,000 followed them in Bhopal, and then for those that lived, they made babies with no eyes, open spines, and brains with the function of an oyster, if that.
Well, it's not my fault. It was a lone nut. Actually, that is what the disgruntled employee is. It's the lone nut theory, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not our fault.
Yeah, he doesn't have to be. He doesn't have to be a gunman just as long as he's alone.
Yeah, it's sort of like, again, it's the mom test. I mean, would your mom appreciate that? Well, then stop doing it, say you're sorry, and put it back the way you found it. Whatever happened to customer service? That's what I want.
The customer is always wrong.
Well, they're, you know, we got two sets of laws, but we're going to get to that in a minute. Well, real quick, I mean, you could easily discuss the military component in the Finch. I think something came up this week about that. Oh, yes. Let's look on the map here. Afghanistan. What is the point? One question I ended up with about the whole thing. What is the point of this? What's the point?
And you know, I mentioned that David Sirota column, and I don't want to go into a big read, but it's kind of hard not to take his questions. He sets up three possibilities for going come big or don't come at all. So for going bigger in Afghanistan, David Sirota sets up three possibilities. One, President Obama believes we can conduct the kind of counterinsurgency he says we need with one-sixth of the troop levels his counterinsurgency experts say are necessary, because that's the big secret. They said they need 600,000 to completely wipe out the insurgency. Two, President Obama is escalating the war with no intention of halting an escalation, but instead an intention of continuing to escalate to much higher troop levels, irrespective of his vague promise to try to bring home troops in 2011. Or, three, President Obama is risking the lives of 100,000 troops in order to prevent being labeled weak, but with no intention of actually waging the counterinsurgency strategy he publicly says is necessary. And what David Sirota says is, I'm going to discount one and two. So that leaves you with some sort of Jedi mind trick.
Oh, God. That just leaves you with just the last... That's just what you didn't want to hear.
That just leaves you with body bags.
Yeah, and it just leaves you with another president who just doesn't get it. Just is totally squandering his time there. I don't know. See, I think he is an eloquent man, and I think he is an intelligent man, and actually, I think there is time. It's running out. But there is time for him to lay down the law if he decides to. It doesn't look like he's headed that way. But he is the boss. I mean, I still think there's time for him to tell people how it's going to be, and if they don't do it that way, well, you pick up two checks. Really, you know, grasping at straws here, but there probably is a little time for that. Hey, the Congress may do what they never do with the Republicans, right? They may say, you don't get your war.
That is a very real possibility, although, you know, you have to start out with the assumption that Congress being servile, Congress will appropriate the money. But, you know, Dennis pointed out very, very appropriately and very, very intelligently that back in October, they already passed a humongous supplemental for Iraq and Afghanistan, or a humongous budget for it. And he said, but I'm sure we'll be asked for a supplemental now. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, there is a little bit of a chance, because Democratic Congresses are generally very much better at pushing back against Democratic presidents than they are pushing back at Republican presidents, because Republican presidents don't hesitate, Reverbo, to go out onto the onto the bully pulpit and say that Democratic Congress is a bunch of communist, knee-jerk, sissy, pinko, you know, pick one, and they don't understand, they don't love America like I do.
They don't support our troops.
And Barack Obama cannot go to war with a Democratic Congress the way a Republican can.
They're going to get it. It's going to just go from bad to worse to a joke. They'll figure out a way to make it work. I guess I kind of tend to agree with Sirota. I wish I didn't. But...
Well, you know, I wish it had been 2010 instead of 2011. If he said, we're going to surge up and see what happens, and if I don't see results pretty, PDQ... We're unsurging. Sorry, no, it's going to be there till 2011, because it turns out that the electoral calculus that was used was his reelection and not that of the sitting Congress.
Indeed. And anyway, don't you think it's absurd that these people, what date are we leaving? How do you pro-war or anti-war? How do you even begin to speculate on what that day would be? I mean, I just... all that is just absurd to me. We've been doing this. We've been going at this. Let's see, 2003. I can do the math on this. It's coming up on 7 years. 7 years we've been chasing a bunch, really just a few, stateless, if I can quote from my own emails, stateless religious gangsters. We've been chasing them around with battle wagons for 7 years. What has it gotten us? What are the results here?
But, you know, that's the funny thing. I agree with you in general principle, but we now know from the Tora Bora report, we kind of knew years ago, didn't we? But we now know from the Tora Bora report that we really weren't chasing. We chased until we hollered, "You're it," and then we didn't chase so much. I mean, yeah. According to that report, Osama bin Laden sat down and wrote his will because he realized that if he was fighting us the way we're fighting him, he would go in and he would keep going until he was dead. But then again, you know, if he gets caught or killed, then the plans for going into Iraq all go swirly down the toilet.
Not exactly just the plan that they told you about. Not the real plan. See, now we're going to get to it here. Because if you want to sit down, if they want to one day sit down and talk to you and I about why we really go to war, and what the hell we're really doing over there in the Middle East, I think you and I and the ghost of General Smedley Butler would be glad to sit down and listen to this story.
Indeed.
But don't talk to me about chasing, if he indeed is a circus freak, a 6'5", God, with a dialysis machine.
Portable dialysis. Don't forget the portable dialysis machine.
I can barely even process this. But I mean,
And the video studio in a bag.
You can't, I don't even understand where this whole Afghanistan, piling on Afghanistan, the report, the 9/11 report, by your own government and mine, they said the thing was hatched in Spain, in Germany, and in the U.S., and it was mostly financed by Saudis. No doubt with last names of people with the Bush family, has done investments with. So the whole thing with Afghanistan was that he holed up there, right? He escaped there, or he and the gang kind of, that was sort of their base or something. They kind of skedaddled over there. The Afghanistan never was involved in 9/11, were they? Was it?
No, because see, that's the thing that keeps hanging in my craw. All this talk about how the Taliban, if they get back, because I saw this clip of, you know, and God bless him for even making the attempt. I saw this clip of Congressman Kucinich appearing, of all places, on O'Reilly, where O'Reilly made the reference. All you lefties, and you're a lefty, Congressman. I mean, come on, we all know it. That was part of it. I know. But where, you know, Kucinich tried to explain to him some of, you know, what you're talking about. And just right over his head like thrown falafel.
It seems like Afghanistan, everybody was itching for a fight. Everybody, and we should be. I mean, it was horrible. And everybody wanted, okay, let's go do some shooting. And somehow Afghanistan, I'm trying to remember all this. Afghanistan seemed to be the appropriate place. It was like no one could argue with that. Even Obama was all for going after Afghanistan. That's where we should be, man, Afghanistan. That's the place to be. That's the place we avenge 9/11, man. And I keep thinking, what?
Well, yeah, and the precise, and O'Reilly kept equating Taliban with Al-Qaeda.
Well, they're not. Well, then he's an idiot.
But see, so many of us don't, and I kind of mentioned this a couple of nights ago, so many of us, Reverbo, don't remember the lead-up to the first bombings of Afghanistan. There was a back and forth. There were offers and counter-offers.
And the first offer was made by none other than the Taliban, who said to us, listen, we're not in love with the guy. We can't get rid of him. He's got more guns than we've got. But we'll find a way to take him and turn him over to authorities in The Hague where he can be tried in the International Criminal Court for what we think we also think he has done.
Turn that down, as I recall.
Turn that down. You are correct, sir.
Well, excuse me. Well, just like here he is. He's behind that tree. Shall we shoot him? Donald Rumsfeld, no, let him go.
You know, so just to be clear, it's, Tora Bora was not the first time that bin Laden was let go.
The Taliban and Al-Qaeda are not the best of friends either.
No, and let's back up again. Let's back up to May of 2001. When the Taliban, the same guys, were given $45 million. By the Bush administration, in recognition, I mean, you can almost hear the certificate being read at the State Department, right? In recognition of your heroic efforts to eradicate opium poppy production in your country. I mean, this is reality.
We cut them a check for $45 million as to say thank you for doing that?
We really, really did, Reverbo.
Wow, it is a wiggly world, isn't it?
Yeah, the positively squirmy.
God! Well, I mean, we gave, you know, what's his name? What was the guy? Instead of getting bin Laden, we ended up finding what's his face in a little spider hole and hanging him. What was his name again?
Oh, yeah, I know. Brutal dictator gasses his own people.
Remember him? I mean, we sell everybody the guns and we sell everybody the rope to hang.
But see, there's also another common thread that runs through this, Reverbo, and that is if you do business with the Bushes, they will eventually double cross you. Do you remember Manuel Noriega?
Indeed.
Happily being the middleman for CIA cocaine-running expeditions all through the Reagan administration, while the CIA bought cocaine. You know, it's all straight out of Catch-22. It's all Milo Minderbinder. He's buying eggs he's buying eggs in Malta for 5 cents and selling them in Pianosa for 3 cents, and everybody makes a profit.
Here, taste this. I just saw that again about 2 weeks ago, and of course, it's not as good as the book, but it's still wonderful. And he hands his Sarian this thing. It looks like a little piece of chocolate candy. Here, taste this. He puts it in his mouth and stuff.
What is this?
And he's horrible. He says, what is this? And
chocolate-covered cotton.
No, it's cotton.
How did I know that the world market for cotton was going to drop out?
I thought I could get the boys to, like, eat it for me. Oh, God.
Because he could get a government contract with Cost Plus. Oh, I know. But if you recall, the CIA, you know, Manuel Noriega was middlemanning the cocaine that the CIA was buying and then selling to turn around and finance the terrorists operating in El Salvador and Nicaragua.
That's all they had to pay for it with.
And then once that deal basically fell through... You remember Eugene Hassenfuss? How can you forget a name like Eugene Hassenfuss?
Yeah, but he was in that plane. He was down there.
Yes, in Costa Rica.
Yeah, he was down there.
Airstrip, plane crash, everything comes apart. Well, as soon as that whole deal went through, Manuel Noriega, who had a shitload of Bush money, became no longer useful, and the money was still useful and needed to come home. Do you remember at about this time of year during the George H.W. Bush administration, we had a little war against Panama?
Very little, but yeah, I kind of do.
And then eventually Noriega winds up in a show trial in Miami.
He does.
Where, and, you know, anybody who's afraid that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed will walk needs to go back and read the transcripts of the Manuel Noriega trial. We didn't seem to have any problem trying him.
No, we're not going to shed any tears for him, but probably we didn't have to do that.
But it's what happens when you do business with the Bushes. Let's come forward on the timeline some. We've all seen that photograph of Donald Rumsfeld shaking hands with Saddam Hussein, having just sold him some poison gas weapons, and Donald Rumsfeld grinning like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush.
Everybody's seen it. Oh, it's a disgrace, but it's no surprise.
And Saddam Hussein was our man in Baghdad because he was willing to bomb the Iranians, whom we had a hard-on for because they decided they didn't like us after we overturned their government. I know it gets a little complicated.
It does.
So there's Saddam's, and he winds up dead. And so we got Noriega in prison. We got Saddam dead. Now, meanwhile, also during the Reagan 80s, during which George H.W. Bush, former head of the CIA, was taking an active role in being the vice president, everybody wonders where the idea of Dick Cheney running the show came from. Need we say more? Well, during the Reagan 80s, there was this little dust-up where the Soviets invaded Afghanistan.
Real quick, those two go all the way back to the Gerald Ford administration.
Absolutely.
I'm interrupting you.
No. So the Bushes get in, you know, via Poppy, get in a little business deal through the CIA with a guy named Osama bin Laden, who has set up what started out to be a sort of USO/VA operation for wounded Afghan resistance fighter vets. And he calls it in Arabic the base. Al-Qaeda. And we funnel tons of money to him. Rocket launchers and grenade launchers and meals ready to eat and bandages and more guns and more bullets. And he's our boy. And he loves doing business with us. And the Bushes, you know, they knew the bin Ladens. You could do business with the bin Ladens because they'd been doing business with the bin Ladens exactly at that moment in time. Because bin Laden money, his dad, Osama's daddy, and granted, Osama's got like 112 brothers. I mean, it's one of those deals.
Yeah.
Osama's daddy was in the construction business in Saudi Arabia. And so he's got a little money he's not doing anything with. He's got some of that Jed Clampett walking around money. And he, George H.W. picks up the phone and says, Mr. bin Laden, I got a son, and he's trying to get something going. He wants to go into the oil business like his old man. Think you could stake him a little?
Here we go.
And so Mr. bin Laden says, oh, yes, it would be my pleasure. You're a great family friend, Mr. Bush.
I said it just like that, too.
Just like it. and so they stake George to something called Arbusto Energy. And George W. Bush becomes the first human being in human recorded history to look for oil in the Texas Permian Basin and not find any.
Yeah, to two bells for that one. Well, if anybody could not find oil down there, it would be him.
And meanwhile, this thing is going down over in South Asia where they have just found out that while George can't find oil in the Permian Basin, somebody else has found a boatload of it in the Caspian Basin. And there's just this one problem. Logistics. How to get at it. And in the meantime, backing up just a hair, I'm sorry, am I boring you?
No, I'm over at the big board looking at the Caspian Sea.
Okay. Oh, well, that, don't put it on the internet. Everybody will see the big board. You don't want that. You don't want them to see the big board.
I don't want everybody to see that, but I...
Okay, but we got to back up just a hair, because in the meantime, George H.W.'s little business dealings begin to spiral out of control a little bit,
because on the one hand, he's taken care of, you know, dead men tell no tales. He's more or less taken care of Manuel Noriega, who is, you know, somewhere in a federal supermax in a lockdown isolation cell with a purple crayon between his toes, screaming his fool head off about, you know, I was sold, right? So now we've got a problem with Saddam Hussein, who has passed his usefulness because the Iran-Iraq war is over, and he's got this massive military.
Who won that war, by the way?
Really nobody. It's kind of funny with wars that way.
It sort of just went away.
You know, granted, a couple of entire generations of both nations dropped dead.
Yeah, and there was a little poison gas unpleasantness.
Right, there was poison gas unpleasantness that Saddam shot at them. But one of the tricky things about using poison gas weapons is that they are subject to something called the wind.
They are.
And it blew back on Saddam, and it wiped out some of his own villages. And George H.W. Bush said, aha. And then, because he was getting screwed out of his oil, Iraq, which didn't have full development of all because of the Iraq war, and you know the first thing you do is you bomb each other's terminals.
Sure.
He wants to further develop his oil reserves, which are massive, and then he finds out that those little piss ants, the Kuwaitis, are drilling him on the slant. In other words, little bitty Kuwait is there, but they're not drilling straight down into the Kuwaiti sand. They're drilling at a 45-degree angle into the Iraqi reserves.
Oh, those clever boys.
Yeah, because it's not like you can see that from the sand.
No.
So Saddam Hussein has a big military that's sitting around not doing anything, and he decides he's going to go and take care of this little problem. But remember, he is George H.W. Bush's man in Baghdad. So he does what any good mafia lieutenant does. He asks the capo first. And in this case, George H.W. Bush is the capo di tutti capo. And so he sends a message to Washington, or actually he sends it to our ambassador, a woman by the name of April Glaspie. And he says, you know, I just found this out, and I'm real pissed off, and I'm going to go and take my stuff back. And if they don't straighten up, I'm going all the way in. And George H.W. Bush and that administration has given pre-existing orders to April Glaspie. I know this sounds like paranoia, but it's all real. It's all verifiable.
No, this is priceless. This explains everything.
And so April Glaspie sends a telex back to our man in Baghdad that says the United States takes no position on Arab-Arab conflicts, which then our dutiful lieutenant, our mafia lieutenant in Baghdad, reads as being, okay, I'm a lieutenant, the Kuwaiti's a lieutenant, I can whack him. Because that's what George H.W. Bush wanted him to do. So you get the big build-up so that George H.W. Bush can maybe at least teach Saddam a lesson. But it gets a little bit out of hand because all of a sudden his pals, the Saudis, remember Mr. Bin Laden?
Mm-hmm.
Who loaned the dim sun the money? Well, they get a little antsy because here comes this big-ass army that they ain't got nothing to march against. And they holler to their business partner, who's also the business partner of Saddam, but, you know. And George H.W. Bush says, this shall not stand. And the next thing you know, you've got the entire United States Army and Air Force and Marine Corps sitting in holy Saudi Arabia, which has real religious strictures about infidels on their sacred sand. And once the problem is gone, we're not.
We're not. And one of those 110 sons of old man Bin Laden objects to it.
Right. And he's been hanging out in the hills and hollers of Afghanistan so long that he's talking to himself. And he's gone native.
Oh, yeah, it's Heart of Darkness time for him.
Oh, yeah, I mean, yeah, the horror, you know? Exactly. Great call.
Yeah.
Perfect reference. He's
gone.
So, but
he's completely unpredictable and dangerous, and he's got a whole bunch of crazy people at his disposal.
Yeah, Bin Laden is Arabic for Kurds, okay?
There you go.
And so we're not gone from Saudi Arabia, and this is a burr under his saddle that it's an itch he can't scratch, and it's driving him batshit. So we're still there, and he starts issuing, you know, what the demands about us getting out of Saudi Arabia. But we don't get out. And by now, Poppy Bush is gone. But the business interests aren't. And it becomes apparent.